When it comes to my involvement in the UAP issue and covering it as a researcher, especially in regards to emerging data or speaking to relevant people in the field, I do my best to conduct myself as professionally as possible because I want to do this subject justice. It's a serious topic and one that is deserving of serious conversation, and that is one thing that I do genuinely pride myself on trying to deliver. And although this side of me is certainly something that I enjoy, it's also nice sometimes to have the opportunity to relax a little bit more and show a different side of yourself because I love having serious discussions. And although the subject matter of this conversation is indeed in many ways serious, this is a far more light-hearted and casual conversation between three colleagues and friends. And I can honestly say that this is one of my favorite discussions that I've had so far since I started Project Unity. This talk originally aired on John Mazurowski's channel, which is called UFOs on the Level, and I would highly encourage all of you to check out his content. He's only recently started this platform, and so I'm sure your support will be greatly appreciated. But first, sit back, relax, and I hope you enjoy this conversation between myself, John Mazurowski, and our mutual friend Jean-Luc.
I'm excited to jump into this. I'm probably going to be listening most of all. I know I'm going to learn some things in this conversation.
No way, dude.
No, you're not.
It's going to be us, man.
Yeah. So yeah, this isn't live, is it? It's
no, cool. No. I just hit record just to just record it. I figured,
sweet, man.
The first time Jean-Luc and I talked was like 3 hours, and I recorded it, and I used like 10 minutes. Of some stuff because that was about
it was a bit like us actually. Remember, we were recording. He came over to my house. We filmed in my back garden. Filmed at a restaurant. Like we did this whole interview thing, and it still hasn't come out. Still got stuff to do on that.
Yeah.
I have a problem with focusing on the
to
job.
Be fair,
at hand.
You did get suddenly hit by a debilitating stomach illness, so
I did.
Fair excuse for delays.
That kind of knocked me out of it, but yeah, hopefully one day that will surface.
Oh, for sure, man. Sure.
I saw the preview, man. You did it, like you did, like an intro thing. That looked rad when you guys like running downstairs or something like that, and I was like,
he was literally just walking through the tunnel entrance to my house, but we made it look so much more mysterious. It's
oh,
great.
Dude, I was hooked. I was like, where are they going? What are they doing?
We're just going. Going onto the main road.
that was the British Area 51. It wasn't anything to do with your alleyway.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people, when I first started filming for the channel, because I was recording a lot of stuff in a forest, this rumor started going around that I was actually on a military compound, and I was just talking on the perimeters of my compound.
It's the only place you could get. It was just like some woods
like
behind
nice
you,
and quiet, away from the guards and the patrols and shit. Yeah,
that's hilarious, man.
If you've got a compound, can I come and move in?
Yeah, I know, right?
What I was getting at though with the Masonic thing, but you're right. I mean, so the Freemason he had, like, we would meet at, you know, on Lodge, and we could talk about things that nobody else could talk about. I mean, that you would talk about in the streets, and that you would literally get thrown in jail, right? So, and then a lot of these revolutions happened because guys met in private as Masons and said, hey, this is bullshit and let's fix it, and they all made a pact and did that. And you know, we can tie it into this, is that when To the Stars happened, you know, I knew that Tom DeLonge was a Freemason, you know, from the whole thing. And, you know, I think Jean-Luc and I were talking about this, but, you know, there's a fun story where a buddy of mine went to, we're going from America to Canada. There's a big bridge, or you can go through a tunnel, but you go over the bridge. There's like five guys in the car that had no business being together. There was like an 80-year-old dude, you know, like everybody from, like, it was a judge. There was like a guy who was like an artist. There was a guy who was like a financial advisor. There was a guy who was like a janitor. And there's a, you know, it was like nobody should be together. And as soon as the border patrol was like, nope, all you guys are getting out. Like, what the hell are you doing? They thought they were trying to sneak into Canada to blow it up or something, you know? And finally, they were just going to a Masonic lodge. You guys, they knew each other from the Masons that were like traveling to go to the Canadian lodge and just hang out. And another Mason was one of the Mounties and was like, dude, I know all these guys. It's cool. And it's like, this is weird. So in my mind, I've always had that. And then when To the Stars came out and Tom DeLonge standing on stage with all of these dudes, and I'm like, ding 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 in my head, I'm like, if these guys were all Freemasons, this would make sense. If Tom DeLonge was a Freemason, or any of these guys, or you know, when they got together, I'm like, look, you know, we have all these things that we do with each other, like, you know, we have to be, you know, we can't lie to each other, you know, we have to keep each other secrets, things like that, and we can trust each other explicitly. So I'm thinking, holy shit, what if Tom DeLonge just used the Freemasons to like make this thing happen? And it's
You know? I reckon, and I think the reality of it is that, well, not maybe not the reality, but the reality from what I think is,
yeah,
it's always been that way, because ufology in terms of American ufology, like, you know, began in what we're talking, like the 50s flat, let's say.
Yeah, yeah, like 52, somewhere around there. Yeah.
Big, you know, 47. But it was at a time where Jack Parsons was doing his thing with OTO. So, right. Like, you know, and the people that worked with Parsons were the guy who went on to found Scientology, the guy who went on to set up SRI, you know, the Stanford Research Institute.
Right.
Like, so these connections are big. There were, you know, there's Rosicrucian involvement in that, and we talked about this last time. Mm-hmm. Like, so that whole environment was based on that. It came from that. I mean, I don't know how far people need to go into it if they're watching a video, but most people understand the occult nature of NASA, and obviously, right. Most people who are into this topic understand that it originates with JPL, Parsons. So, like, the fact that it's all there, like many people have written about it, it's no real secret. But that is the start of modern ufology, and, like, you know, and it's that is the bare roots of it.
I'd love to jump in real quick just to recommend people listen to Peter Lavender's presentation about the origins of NASA. It's somewhere deep on my channel. If you wanted to go onto Project Unity and scroll down, the Peter Lavender talking about the origins of NASA, but it's all about the strange churches, the strange occult ties, you know, Scientology, dives into it really well. And I think Peter Lavender really knows his stuff when it comes to that.
Oh, yeah. That was a great video. I mean, he does, he just drops it all out, like the process church and like all the weird stuff that's going on.
I had no idea about any of that stuff prior to it. And I was just listening like, what?
Mm-hmm. He's involved himself like in some like really serious stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, he went to the compounds in South America where they have the ex-Nazi or the ex-German colonies. Mm-hmm. It was apparently when he was there were still massively Germanic, German speaking, German shops, a whole lot. But then at the same time, he started to get to the point where he was infiltrating that world, you know. But Peter Lavender's obviously put himself in a great position because he states that he's not actually a Mason himself. He's a friend of the Masons. Like, he works a lot, you know, works with them, and which is, I guess that's what I'm doing at the moment. But like, but it's like
officially, you're officially now working with a Mason.
No, I'm working. I'm working for Tom DeLong, and no.
Don't, because people will quote you and it'll go on Twitter.
I'm not working with Tom DeLong. No. If so, please send more money. But yeah, like so really, like for me, like it's Peter Lavender's like a big part of it. He's, you know, he's there writing the books for Tom DeLong and with Tom DeLong.
Right.
There's a message or an ideology that's being pushed through the ethos of the company, or was. So it's all there, isn't it? I mean, but yeah. Like I think we've said before, people get hung up on the videos and I guess the characters involved. And that sort of the ethos and the ideologies behind it seem to get put on a bit of a backseat. But maybe not if you're following or looking or reading different types of materials. But generally, like popular culture-wise, To the Stars Academy haven't come out and said the stuff they've said in their books on any news broadcast, you know what I mean? Because it's completely different.
And I think it's scary, though. I think it really scares the shit out of people. I mean, just because it's like, if that's real, then everything is. I mean, if the magic or whatever, you know, that they're doing or the, you know, all the stuff behind all the occult things that they're, you know, if Jack Parsons is out in the desert with, you know, doing, you know, the trying to invoke whatever he was doing, you know, to bring about, you know, open up portal and all this shit. And like, and if that's something that the government's paying attention to and they're, they're doing it and it could be working or something. I mean, that just crosses the line for people where they just like can't even process that in their brains. They're like, this is really happening? Because everybody puts it in the Hollywood aspect of it. It's just like, woo-woo, you got Merlin and you got all the shit that it doesn't real. I mean, kids, I mean, looking at any of the Disney stuff or any of the stuff you grew up with, there's always a magician or like, you know, a fairy godmother, and there's this shit going on, you know? So you kind of being indoctrinated in it from when, as a kid, and at least, you know, lately, but in, you know, historically, all the stories and stuff too. So,
well, the very essence of fairy tales, man, like, you know, the fact that kids grow up getting read fairy tales as they fall asleep and nursery rhymes that usually focus on, you know, occult origins and strange magic and odd stories, and what's the biggest franchise now, or was, like Harry Potter, like, you know, the whole thing. Like, when you start getting into the symbology and stuff, like, in those kind of books, like, it is, it's an introduction to alchemy and magic, and it's nuts, really.
Do you guys ever, like, get the feeling that, like, these weird origin stories to NASA is almost kind of like the awkward uncle in the family, and they don't really want to talk about it, and it's not like there's some prophecy that's building up now, it's just that these were the weird, like, acid taking crazy dudes that were, like, building NASA. They're not representative of our goals now. Like, which way is this going? Is it like, yes, these are the roots and this is the story that's unfolding, or is it more like, yeah, that's the awkward route to our story?
I think if you're talking about in terms of awkward, like, yeah, you tell that story to, like, I always think about my dad here, because he's a broad-minded enough guy, but if you get onto this topic, if I start to say, Dad, NASA is founded on cult symbology, and the guys who did a ritual out in the desert, like, with ritual magic and stuff, he'd be like, what?
Oh,
just,
okay, son.
Disregard it.
How much have you had to drink, my man?
Yeah, I know. We know all about you, Joe. We're like, but it's like, yeah, the reality of it is like, if you sell that to him, he'd just be like, that's ridiculous. And then he'll just go back to and watch, like, you know, the moon landing and the awesome satellite stuff and the cool stuff that's going on now. Like, that's the friendly face of it. But his generation, very different in terms of, like, the, you know, spiritually and stuff too, like, after World War II and as to how it is now. So they went, I think that a lot of the country obviously went into a lack of spirituality over the last few decades. Like, people definitely turned away from churches in this country, but then what you see is, like, I don't know if it's just me and what I read, but it seems to be permeating quite a lot of modern society in the younger generations, like a new modern spiritual, like a neo.
No, I'd agree with that.
Yeah,
I agree too.
And it's
not so much a preordained religion, but just a more kind of esoteric feeling about life, and that there is more mystery to it, and an openness to life after death and things like that. Just not so closely restricted by religion. That's what I've noticed, at least amongst my friends and people my age.
And I think that is, there's a reason for that. And I think that, like, me growing up, when I grew up, I was at the start of that, where it was effective with trying to spread a message of a new age spirituality. And we mentioned this last time I spoke to John, like, with the Close Encounters kind of vibe and the messages that pushed. But nowadays, like, the messages, and, you know, going back again to, like, mainstream news, like, people involved in some of the mainstream craziness that's been going on worldwide would say that they're spiritually awakened warriors of some sort. And, like, say that sort of thing 10 years ago in this country, you'd be laughed, well, 20 years ago, people would have laughed at you.
Well, I think it's down to how we process information now as well, because, I mean, obviously you've got the internet and the fact that it's not so, you don't have information restricted to channels that are controlled by the establishment. You've got, especially in the younger generations, people are more willing to listen to podcasts than news stations, you know, that, you know, they'd rather tune into Joe Rogan than tune into CNN. And I think that because of that, you get introduced to a much wider kind of breadth of different ideas and challenges to the status quo. So I think that when it comes to spirituality, I think, at least from my perspective, because I've learned so much from the internet, I mean, I'll give you one example, is that I've got a live 24/7 stream of Alan Watts that pretty much plays all the time in my bedroom. And, you know, I can only do that because of the internet, and someone created the 24/7 stream of this guy's philosophies. And so you got to imagine, I would, you know, back in the days when you had to actually walk to areas and speak, or, you know, pass books out, we still do that, but we have this mechanism now to globally, instantaneously interact and exchange information. And I think that that's played a large role in how spirituality, in the way that it's being seen now, has catalyzed itself.
Yeah. And this idea as well that, like, you know, like you were saying, you watch podcasts and tune into different channels and this and that. You're choosing, people choose their own reality, I suppose. And lockdown, like, and the coronavirus thing, like, it's kind of put us into situations where I've had more time to indulge myself in this kind of different types of mediums because I've not been working as much. I'm at home more. So your reality does become, you know, yeah, I'm aware there's coronavirus out there. That's the miserable news that I don't want to really hear. But you indulge yourself in stuff that's more to your liking.
Yeah.
And then it becomes kind of like everything. So the idea that the internet provides like a portal to build your own reality, especially in this environment where you're locked in your own home. Yeah. Like,
yeah, man.
In terms of like manifesting events, feelings, like, you know, this is it. We're in like the fermentation chamber, man.
Yeah. Well, look what we're doing right now.
Like, yeah, totally. I mean, all of us are
people
together.
Aren't sure what the future brings. Like, is it going to be revolution? How many people are going to die? It's terrifying shit, man. We're in a pretty terrible time. Terrible time. It worries me every day, man. And I guess it worries everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you have to be in a terrible time to get out of one.
Yeah. But at the same time, what you find is, like, what happens is people become more spiritually attuned. And I wonder if there has been this brewing feeling for a lot of people for a long time, I guess, and certain people are getting more switched onto it. And a new generation of people brought up in a way more spiritual manner. It makes me wonder if it's prep. Like,
well, as much as this sucks, you know, humans thrive off adversity. We thrive when we're challenged. That's when innovation kicks in. That's when people actually, you know, when we're comforted and blanketed for too long, that's when things slow down, in all honesty, you know, whether it's an individual or whether it's a whole country or a whole species. So I suppose, you know, and you can attribute this to your own individual life. When turbulent things come into your life, it can seem very intense at the time, but then it leads to opportunities. And, you know, if you're a self-reflective person, you can look back on it and go, oh, well, it was meant to happen. And yeah, it sucked at the time, but I can recognize the good in it now. And you'd like to think that that's happening on a geoplanetary scale as well with things like this. And that, you know, ultimately these are happening for reasons that if we pay attention as a species, we'll gain some good wisdom, some good insight, and move forward. And so, you know, that's the only way that I feel that we can see it, because in the trenches, it's very negative. You know, it's hard to see the positive. But if you can kind of have that macro view of how things unfold, then there's a good chance that this is happening for a good reason.
Well, and then I think back to like the quantum, you know, where quantum's a big thing, and everybody's talking about quantum and you know how, you know, you're really not apart from anything. So all of us, I mean, we're across an ocean from each other.
Right,
we're having
right.
a conversation. We're sharing our thoughts, our ideas, our feelings, our emotions. And we're kind of like syncing up in a way that's, you know, we're manifesting the reality that we want.
Yeah,
you know,
we're entangled.
Yeah, definitely. We're quantumly entangled. All of us. I mean, and we're positive. I mean, and like if we focus on the positive instead of the negative and the love and all that stuff. And I think that just raises the vibration. And I think that's, you see that in different groups. I mean, not only in, you know, like UFO Twitter or, you know, whatever, but I mean, if people get together like that and the way we're doing it, you know, it could be a global thing where, you know, the positivity and, you know, we're not sitting there going, you know, rumorating on the negative, you know.
Like the perfect example of this in today's news in the UK is that apparently young men and teenagers and stuff are doing this thing where they sing sea shanties. I was just like, what?
So man, I'm doing that all the time.
What the hell is that? But, I don't know what that is.
I'm joking. I have no idea what he's talking about.
Do you know sea shanties? Like old sailor songs, like kind of.
Yeah, I know what a sea shanty is.
Oh.
Yeah, a sea shanty. So like apparently the people are recording them on the internet, getting into the shanty, and the people are joining it and harmonizing it.
That's crazy.
So, but on the radio show I was listening to, they were talking about how, firstly, it was funny. Secondly, how as a psychological study of what's going on in this country, something as bizarre and outlandish as that, in a culture that doesn't do sea shanties.
Yeah, yeah.
they find some beauty in it and some joy, and they start doing it, and it's quite a positive thing, and it's about belonging, and it's about, you know, because there's no way else to do it.
Togetherness,
And now, yeah, here, unless you're in a big house with a big family around you, like a lot of people, their contact is over the internet. And like, you know, it's the internet thing, like, you know, what's been talked about recently with, you know, Elon Musk said it a while back. He said, if there's an alien amongst us, he said it was the internet. Same with Bowie.
So did David Bowie.
Yeah,
and then Bledsoe said that in your interview, right,
Jay? Yeah, he was quoting. He said it from David Bowie, I believe. He was saying it because, it was. He said it was an interview that David Bowie did where he said that the alien. It wasn't an interview I did. No, I think we're both getting our wires crossed here. Because if you've listened to the same interview as me, it's actually from Lex Fridman's interview with Diana Pasolka.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah, there she was go. The one who said that. But yeah, because she's involved with Chris Bledsoe, I thought for a minute. No. Yeah, it was the one with Lex Fridman, which is a great interview for anyone who's listening right now. You should definitely check out the Diana Pasolka interview with Lex. That's great.
And read that book. That book is amazing, too.
American Cosmic. Yeah, it's on my, my birthday's coming up. It's on my list.
Oh, man. I'll send it to you for your birthday, man. Happy birthday.
Oh, nice. I think my mom's already got that job, but I can give you another book. Don't worry.
All right, Diana Pasolka on your show and get her to read it to you.
Yeah, there you go.
I would love to get Diana on.
Dude, I mean, there's that. That's something to unpack. I mean, that's a lot. I mean, you know, we talked about that. I mean, that whole spiritual thing and the Vatican and the lady and everything that's going on. And man, I used to think everything was nuts and bolts, you know, I really did. Yeah. But now there's no way.
I love the way it's going. Like this little narrative with Tyler at the Vatican in front of the Templar stuff. It's
What's the relevance of the book that he's what's the relevance of the book he's next to in the Vatican secret archives though? I'm guessing one of you would know.
The one that you had to take the picture down from?
No, I didn't have to take that. I didn't have to take that image down. That one's still on there. I had to take down an image of a letter. And
That's right.
I think there was another one, but no, he was it was Tyler D outside, inside the Vatican secret archives. He was standing outside of an exhibition with a book,
I saw it. Yeah, it was a Templar
something.
Templar records, basically. Yeah. It's like a section of the Vatican that's exceptionally difficult to get access to. Interview, didn't she, about how she gets in there?
Well, somebody translated and it said something about the secret the entrance to the secret archive or the secret archive something, whatever the Latin was or whatever on the book. It said something about the secret.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. The bottom, the little insignia. Yeah, because it was housed in the secret archives. Right. I mean, the whole thing with that was that Tyler D and Diana Pasolka had got, you know, permission to go into the secret archives. And on behalf of Chris Bledsoe, you know, to go and speak with him. And for those who've listened to my interview, what Chris Bledsoe describes is that through Diana, via the Pope, he was given a letter and some images from antiquity that were depictions of orbs with angelic beings inside them, shooting light towards quite priestly looking individuals, including Saint Francis, which were depicting the stigmata. And the Pope had said in the letter that to be careful of the orbs because they are angelic beings and that they don't mean to do any harm, but that they're comprised of such an intense energy and they can get so excited by your presence that they can get too close and quite literally kill you. So, I mean, you know, I haven't seen that letter, but this is a letter that he was supposedly given by the Pope, who was warning him to just be careful of his interactions with orbs. And so, you know, the Chris Bledsoe story for me, it's the actual fact that there is evidence that there's a high level of interest, you know, from government, Jim Semivan to NASA and the different, you know, different physicists of taking an interest to even the Vatican and being allowed, you know, his third party associates to be allowed into the Vatican archives on his behalf. And so there's something going on here that's profoundly important. And I'm not quite sure I know what it is yet.
Well, I think it's the a lot of people believe in prophecy. And I think that they think that that's what they're going to find. And also, like, you know, it's not being I'm not the first person to say it, but like the idea that something's being started, or it's a large ritual, an ongoing thing that's happening.
Well, I was talking to I was just quickly saying that, like, how crazy would it actually be if, you know, everyone's just going about their normal lives. Most people are just going about their normal lives, you know, day to day, 9 to 5, looking after the kids. Imagine if it actually turns out there is some huge underlying prophecy that is supposed to unfold and there is like this awakening that's coming in the next few years. I mean, if that's actually the case and there's people that are aware of that, how do you deal with that? How do you handle that? How do you disseminate that out into the public?
I don't think you can, man. Like, I mean, although maybe the way you do it is if it is that kooky and really based in like occult magic and stuff, which maybe it is, but I guess you'd fight it with magic. And how would you do that? You get all the people who don't believe in magic, like most of the world, to raise their vibrations. And you know, sadly, COVID's not really helping that. But like we were saying before, people are individually trying to raise the vibrations. There's this vibe that we actually are all in it together, yeah? Despite, yeah, like, kind of nations being divided into little factions. But as a world, we're actually facing something. Like, you think about, remember that Reagan interview where he talks about alien threat, what might bring you together? That might bring you together. The disease that
affects the whole world, right?
Keeps on going, I think about this quite a lot. It worries me. But at the same time, you know, like the reality of it is, it's kind of like if you want to save a planet, you've got to do drastic stuff because we've become so arrogant. Oh, I hate this because I don't think the human race is arrogant, but I think what we've discovered, we're destroying ourselves with. Like, it's only been
a complacency, almost a complacency in our consciousness, like planetary, like there's just like a can't be bothered.
Yeah. Right.
Can't be bothered to fix things.
Yeah. Man, like, you know, our grandparents, like every single one of our grandparents probably were surprised when they got an indoor toilet, yeah?
Yeah.
Like, that's the better truth of it. And it's that isn't that long ago, mate. Like, right. I remember growing up and not having central heating. Like, and now it'd be like, oh my God, I don't have central heating. This is ridiculous, yeah? But you just put more clothes on and you got into bed and you put two duvets on. Yeah. Like, we are. Like, now it's become the point where it's like, seriously, man, like, we do not know how lucky we are. Even the person who sat at home in a small place with a heated building. Jesus Christ. Like,
you know, that's a funny synchronicity because literally last night it was so cold. I got inside. It was so cold and I got into bed. And I did have, I genuinely had that thought of like, I'm so grateful that I've got a bed and a duvet and a, you know, blanket and a house and a roof. And like, it's good to have, I think it's good to have those moments of gratefulness because yeah, like we're profoundly, you know, fortunate. We're, even though we've got the ability to see quite high levels of corruption, I think this is kind of the thing, right? Is that there's all these different levels of suffering in the world. We're not having to deal with hunger on a day-to-day basis. Like, you know, our primary mode of survival is not we need to find food on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, so people who are like that are consumed by that. That's all that matters to them is to, you know, maintain survival each day because each day is a genuine challenge to survive. We're fortunate enough, most of us, to not be in that type of position. But because of the privilege that we do have, which is all of the different things around us that we've just listed, we have the ability to see a higher level of corruption and a higher level of an issue that's going on that people who have to, you know, spend their day trying to survive just don't see because it wouldn't figure into their survival life, you know. But we have a different view because of our privilege. And I think that that's one thing to take away from it is to maybe not necessarily beat ourselves up over the fact that we have this privilege, but to use it in a sense to you know, as a platform to start doing something that other people can't do because of the fact that they're not in our situation.
Yeah absolutely. Totally. Absolutely. But again, this potentially could be that tipping point. I mean, the longer we go through this situation, the only thing that's going to hold people together, societies together, is taking away the threat of financial ruin. Because the further things go on, like, you know, if you have to keep locking down and, you know, really, you still got like billions of people to feed. Like, think about Britain, still got 70 million people or whatever that are all going to need to survive. So they're all going to need money. Otherwise, what's going to happen? It just breaks down. So the answer, there's only one answer if it doesn't resolve itself quickly. And that's basically, they'll have to start giving people a universal basic income. Like, I just can't see any other way around it. And
yeah.
Well, not to spin off of that for a second, but something that just popped into my head, like out of nowhere, sorry to interrupt you, but I just was thinking about, you know, so the other worldwide pandemic, it was the Spanish flu in 1919, right? I think it was something like that, 1919.
Yeah.
And what just popped into my head was that that was the year of Fatima, the same thing that was the same year as Fatima, right?
Oh,
interesting. Very interesting.
Oh, that is interesting. I'm going to Google to make sure.
Yeah, I think it was. It was 18 or 19. It was one of those 2 years. It was right before or during, or I think the Spanish flu thing happened for a couple, like, two or three years, right?
Spanish flu was 1918.
And Fatima had, I think it was 19. I'm for some reason, that just kind of got beamed into my skull. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, don't worry.
I was now.
So Fatima was 1917. So that is quite interesting, actually, that that occurred and then something quite global occurred afterwards.
Yeah.
I suppose you just come out of World War One,
right?
So in terms of like the way people's minds were at the time, they were pretty desperate for something nice, man. Like something divine.
Yeah.
Again, like we're in a time where people seemingly seeing more of this sort of thing, and they're going back to those sorts of beliefs. We're in tough times.
But what if like what you said before too? And I can never pronounce this, the toppers, or where you basically manifest what you're concentrating on and you're thinking about, and we're at this global level of everybody's in this like. If we're in this funk or, we're feeling dread or whatever we're doing and we're doing it collectively, I mean, are we manifesting the lady? Are we bringing her on to, or is she coming because we're all in this funk and we need some help? Or, you can go anyway with it, right? I mean, is it she here for good or for bad? Or like, is it connected? I don't know. I just thought that it was interesting.
Well, I think if you asked, for example, maybe Terence McKenna, he'd probably say that it's a cultural symptom of our own, overmind, of the own conscious overmind, that it's perhaps not even a real deity or anything other than merely an overlay of the human consciousness interacting with itself to help itself. It's not my opinion. It's just a thought that popped in because I know that's the kind of way that someone like Terence would look at it.
Yeah.
Same with Carl Jung. Like the collective unconscious, like it becomes something that you expect to see. If that's been something that your family and their descendants for thousands of years have had a female mystical figure, it's always been there. Like, I mean, the amount of people online that talk about the different types of mystical ladies there have been and female goddesses that could fit the bill, but they're endless. It's always been there. Like, the female, like the divine feminine, it's always been there. And I guess like I've been reading a little bit about that recently too, and obviously because the divine feminine is related to the moon, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
All right, and the male energy is usually related to the sun, like the soul.
The sun, yeah.
Yeah. So there's an interesting picture. Like, did you guys ever see that picture that got out there of the presidents all having to look at the moon one time?
Yeah.
That was weird.
Because you live in a patriarchal society where the soul. Male is constantly celebrated, and that one incident, I'm guessing, is part of a ritual to accepting the female. Yeah,
acknowledging the divine feminine.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then, if that's true, I mean, that's that tweet that went out there. If that really did come from who it was supposed to come from, like from Diana Pasulka, that's mind blowing stuff. Really, it's kind of like, well, what's going on?
Well, that gets into it. Like, so this whole thing that, we've all been talking about. I mean, there's people like, you turned me on to Scott Wolford. I mean, and I kind of knew who he was, but I didn't realize he was a Freemason. I didn't realize that he was going down the path he did. And then some of the interview you shared with me was amazing, where he just goes through and he just kind of just drops it out that said somebody came to him who was a Mason. They hung out. He knew, on the level that he can trust this guy. He's a Freemason and all this stuff. But this guy was basically like, I need your help. And this is the thing that we got to do.
Yeah,
we got to do.
Me and this dude have been in communication for about a year.
So your guy came to you, did the same thing, right?
Yeah. So, just for fact checking reasons, not for ego or anything. No. He got in contact with me first. I was speaking with this guy for about a year. He was actually interacting on my channel under the handle Indrid Cold, which obviously has connotations, so he was dropping a lot of different comments on my channel, and then we eventually got into email communication, and since then we've had hundreds and hundreds of emails, dozens and dozens of phone calls, looking to have him on the channel soon. That's something that we've been looking at for quite a while, but it just never seemed like the right time. And I was actually surprised because it was Jean-Luc that sent me the interview with Scott Walter going like, yo, like he's talking about your guy, because Jean-Luc knew about this guy that I've been talking with, Indrid Cold, or as Scott Walter called him, which I know him as well, Holden, which isn't his real name, obviously. Mm-hmm. But he's demonstrated to me, he's absolutely demonstrated that he's involved in intelligence channels, and there's no doubt about that in my mind whatsoever. So he was telling me about his involvement with Scott Walter. He was telling me that he'd gone to visit the family, you know, he'd gone to see Scott, he'd drunk bourbon with the guy and you know, told him all about his, you know, his, well, to the extent he could, his life, and showed his credentials and his details. And I said, oh man, I wish you could have done that with me. I wish you could have flown out and seen me. You know, obviously it's a little bit harder. I'm in the UK, but no, it's a really interesting twist in this little story. And he isn't someone that I've brought up on my channel much, just because, you know, to be honest, I've been trying to figure it all out. I've been trying to figure this all out myself and have this conversation with him in the background. And it's getting to this point now, especially now that he's involving himself with Scott, where I'm just like, right, well, this guy's obviously making moves. He's talking to people. He wants to do something about this. He's never given me the indication that he's trying to misinform. And he's never pushed me to put information out that I've never understood or anything like that. It's always more just been there as an advisor and in an advisory capacity. That's how I would put him. And he's getting himself involved with Scott, and I'm probably going to hopefully speak with Scott soon and get him on the channel, because I've obviously got this connection now with him through this dude we're both speaking with. But it's all very mysterious.
Yeah.
And I never expected this to happen in my, like, you know, when I first got into this subject, I was, like I said, talking in the forest with a little camera, setting it up in the tree, because I saw some crazy stuff and I had to talk about it. And people always go like, oh, you know, why do all of these UFO guys suddenly get all these sources and all these it happens. It really does. If you start doing the work and you're putting in the work, people do approach you. That's the only thing I can say from self-experience, is if you're putting in the work and they're impressed, they will approach you.
Yeah, no, totally. And I was always afraid, and I've said this in a couple of my videos too, I was always afraid of that shit, because when I grew up, mm-hmm. people would, when that happened, you were in a van and nobody talked to you again.
Oh yeah,
right? Or you came back later and you didn't talk about anything anymore, you know. It wasn't like, hey, I'm here to help and be cool. It was like, you're done. Like, you touched the nerve a little too tight. And, you know, that was back in the day, though. I mean, now you think with the internet, like we were talking before, I mean, it's real easy to have anybody go out there, see whatever the hell they want. But
this is a weird thing. Sorry, John. It's just a weird little tidbit, and I'm just throwing it out there because you guys probably appreciate this as well. But before I actually, before I got into communication with this guy, and before I got contacted by like Richard Dolan and Grant Cameron and people like this, because I was really lucky to get this sudden, ability to connect with a few quite notable researchers. And before all of that happened, because that, like, getting connected to Richard and Grant and also this other guy all happened very within a short space of time around themselves. And before that, I had this crazy dream, and like, it, you know, I've always thought to myself, like, oh man, that was definitely some weird premonition. And the reason I do is because of what happened after I had this dream, because the dream itself is relatively simple, but this has just never happened before. So I was suddenly in this dream, I was in a car just flying down the highway, and I was in the passenger seat, and there was someone else driving the car, and we were just absolutely flying down the highway at ridiculous speeds. And that's all the dream was. But I woke up and I just had like total vertigo. The whole room was spinning, everything was just spinning. I went to get out of bed and I fell over onto the ground. Whoa. Like my entire motor response was gone, and I spent the whole day throwing up into the toilet. Like, wow. I was totally blasted out, everything was gone, and I felt so stressed. Every time I looked at the computer screen, I was getting like nausea, and I couldn't think about information for the channel. Every time I tried to read a document, I was just like, oh. So I had a break, and I took this break, and I just felt better, and I got myself collected. And once I felt better, all this stuff just suddenly landed on me. Richard Dolan, Grant Cameron, this guy getting connected to me, and it was just like, holy shit. And I felt okay, I felt ready to take it, but it was just this really weird dream, almost like, buckle up, buddy, because things are about to get weird. And it, like, you know, to the point where I woke up and the whole room was just spinning. And yeah, so I've always just felt like that was some weird sign about what was to come for my own personal journey.
No, dude, yeah, that's crazy. I mean, it's right. probably something. It's not crazy. I mean, it's probably all connected in some way, man. I mean,
what I mean, the fact that you're getting chaps contact you, telling you who, you know, the high level intelligence operatives or the DOD or whatever it may be, and giving stuff that's quite like, kind of, I mean, enough to keep you on the hook. enough to keep Scott Walter on the hook. So all of a sudden, like, it's quite, I find that really interesting. I also find it really interesting that, you know, in the Scott Walter interview, they go into the TV show Dark.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I was going on about this the other day online, but yeah, I finally got around to actually really watching
it. So good, isn't it?
It's excellent, yeah. Like, and when I start to, you know, get into it all, and you start to see the Sigmundus S. Creatus, yeah? Is that right?
Sigmundus
Creatus S.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, basically that's in relation to the Emerald Tablet,
yeah,
which is something that was created apparently by Hermes or Thoth.
Well, you know, this guy told me that he was this is one of the first things he told me, and you know, he has roots, he actually has roots before intelligence in the like film production music industry, in different caveats, different roles, and he did, this is actually you know, obviously when he was working with Dark, this is after his intelligence, you know, during his intelligence career, but before his intelligence career he was involved in that kind of stuff anyway. But yes, he said that he was an intelligence consultant on all three seasons of Dark, and that, you know, he said to me that there is more real science in that series that relates, although subtly, does relate directly to the UFO phenomenon. There is more science in that series than any other series, anything ever made, in his opinion, you know, that's public record. So it's worth listening to and taking it in, because they do discuss different formats of physics for time travel. Some of it goes over my head, but he, you know, if we're going to take what he says about it, then yeah, it's basically got a composite of some of the most real science about out there physics to do with UFOs and time travel.
Sounds like when you sort of get into it as well, I mean, I'm like you, I don't understand quantum physics and stuff that's going on with this, that kind of science, but
yeah,
okay, I get it enough to watch the show and follow it. But the impression I get when they're talking about it, it's all about the Higgs particle, isn't it? And
yeah,
particle. So it was the idea that's going on at CERN now, and some of the strange things you see coming out of CERN, and some of the really exciting things, like you know, this stuff is, a reality. I mean, people have theorized it, talked about it for a long time, like people that are hugely intelligent and respected people. So yeah, maybe it is real. And one thing that, obviously, if time travel is real, you know, I mean, we're like, well, how can it be? There's no way we could invent that, but time travel is real. Like, it doesn't matter, does it?
don't matter. It's real, mate.
That's it.
Yeah. 2,000 years, 2,000 years time, someone invents it and starts that loop. It's real.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
I think it's a brilliant link, man. Like, it, and again, when you sort of take it to the mythology behind it, and you look at what the Sigmundus Creatus Est means, and you know, it was a thing that was discovered, and then it was by the temple, well, not the Templars didn't discover it, but they made a real deal of translating it, and it was important to them. And then Sir Isaac Newton later on went and did his own version, and Sir Isaac Newton obviously was following on, going into things like the Invisible College, which I think we've all talked about before. Like the World Society and that sort of stuff, but the early days of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like you sort of see this pattern, and it's again, it goes back to sections of Freemasonry and Knights Templar. So it's interesting. So you've got two times.
Have you seen it, John?
I haven't seen it. No, I watched the beginning of it last night. And it was just like, I think my wife got it and was like, nope. She thought it looked like it was too scary. You know? Yeah, she was like, okay. Nope.
I'm a bit of a film nerd and I love it. It just drips that atmosphere. It's like, it's so well put together just from like a film perspective, like so dark and gritty. If you like that kind of stuff, which
yeah,
I do.
Yeah.
And like the music score throughout it with the violins and stuff. Oh man, just chilling. Like it's just so well put together as a series. And then the concepts being discussed as well.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna dive in. The thing that gets me to, like, so you go back to, like, so if Holden or this guy, you know, if he is a Mason, if he's tied in the Rosicrucians, I don't know if he is or not. I mean, it'd be something to ask him.
Seems to be.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, he's a brother of mine, and you know, I could reach out to him, and I have to trust him. And I think this way, the same way that Scott does, because of the, you know, I mean, we're not, it's not like all Masons are, you know, completely perfect, and you know, we're all, I mean, we're all humans too. But I'm thinking, what if he's got his hands in all of this, in that show, and in what he's doing with Scott, who has a platform, who could do a show, your show. I mean, you have a platform, Jay, that you know you're doing, and like. Has he been tasked by somebody at this level that we don't possibly understand for a message?
The most I can probably say about that is that he's said to me that there is, hang on, let me just clear my throat and I'm just going to mute myself to do it.
Yeah.
The most I can probably say about that is that he has told me that this is something that he's been greenlit to do, that it's not necessarily part of his job description, more of like an extracurricular activity, I suppose you could say, that has some sort of official stamp of approval over it. So he does still have to report to superiors about, you know, certain aspects of what he's doing, because the point of this is he, at least through his own words, is supposed to be helping with disclosure, you know, in the ways in which he can do that. And so, you know, I asked him quite early on when we were speaking, are you interacting with any other channels? You know, is this, and he said at the time, I don't have that much time in my day. So, you know, no, I'm only interacting with you. So now he's interacting with Scott. And he seems to be, based on the conversations that we've had in the background, very happy about interacting with Scott, and seems to be having a really good relationship with this guy, especially like you said, because they're both brothers, and there seems to be some sort of understanding, at least in that respect. So that, you know, and well, he flew out to his house, you know, and met the guy and sat down with him and his wife. So there's definitely something going on here that should probably be paid attention to. But right now, I'm quite unsure of what this all really means. And like I said, I'm looking forward to having these guys on, because it's been in the works for a little bit with this guy Holden, but now that Scott Walter's interested as well, I think that having the two of them on for a discussion would probably be pretty important.
Yeah. I mean, if it is who he says it is, like, then yeah, pretty important, it's an understatement. It'd be amazing.
Yeah. Like, yeah. No, totally. Yeah, absolutely.
Like, but like, what I just think is, you know, you got two tangents though. Like, I can't get over this. Like, both of them head towards this Templar or Rosicrucian vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain vibe as well that, you know, and Chris Bledsoe, or probably Ryan actually said it the other day in an interview, where there's a threatening element. So there's people that come to them that are really nice and friendly and cool. And then there's people that are sort of in the mid ground who are aware of there's an element, and but they're all right. And then you've got the ones who are decidedly nasty and have threatened them for whatever reason. But I mean, the message that they've got is like one of kind of peace, isn't it? Like it's a real spiritual message.
Seems to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And then back to TTSA, the other big players like that we've seen over the last few years, their message is one of, it's not peace, is it? Like, not from what I see, it's a threat narrative. So, like, I mean, it's an awesome narrative too. It is. I mean, like, looking at disclosure, like actually getting the Pentagon to engage. But the overriding thread with that that comes out of it is that they're appealing on a threat level. People in important levels need to take note, because this potentially could be a threat to American airspace. Or American safety.
Mm-hmm.
So, go on.
Sorry, yeah. We should probably do a raising hands thing, I guess, instead of cutting.
Yeah,
No, that's all right.
All I was going to say there was, I guess, and this is like the kind of thing that I've echoed before, and maybe it's not this black and white, but my thoughts on the whole threat narrative was just that it's bureaucracy language. You know, it's the kind of language that actually precipitates a response from the government, from the body politic, from the defense intelligence bureaucracy. You know, if you go in there talking about oneness and peace with VTs, they're just
gonna get
the hell out of the Department of Defense. So if you go in there talking about, you know, the acquisition of information relating to national security, about incursions and threats of anomalous vehicles over sensitive target ranges, you know, you suddenly get an interest from the body politic going, holy shit, okay, that sounds really serious. Now the DOD is saying that there's something really real. And so I think that, you know, it might not be this black and white, but it just seems to me that at least on the surface level, the threat narrative is more about getting an official response from the United States government through the language that they're using. And these guys are professionals navigating and negotiating through the channels of the United States, you know, especially Christopher Mellon and Lou Elizondo.
Totally. I think they know from the inside what is going to initiate a response from from the government, right?
Absolutely.
And if you, like you said, if you go in there talking about angels and fairies, they're going to be like, screw off. But if it's like, hey, we need to spend a bunch of money, which is going to get a lot of people's interest because everybody has an interest in getting somebody else a contract or whatever. But if we're going to have to go in there because it's a threat, then that's called the Department of Defense. It's not called the Department of Fairy, you know, like the Department of Light.
Exactly,
it's called the Department of Defense.
We do. I'm guessing though that, like, you know, the reality is, so these meetings happen at top level. Senators are informed of this potential threat and these videos. And the next thing that happens is they go, right, so if this is actually a threat, right, we need our intel guys, the ones who aren't TTSA, having a quick look into this, the background of it. They're going to read Gods and War. They're going to read Secret Machines.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're going to go, well, hang on a second. This is a Gnostic text. This is a religious, spiritual text. Yeah? Essentially a pseudo history of Nazi UFOs, like for the fictional stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, honestly, top level senators like are sat in a meeting and they've got guys coming in going, we're from a secret UFO, dude, oh my God. And you got Chris Mellon from the Mellon family, serious guys, I'm involved in, you know, serious shit. You're going to go, all right, we've got absolutely tons of intel, dudes. Go and read everything they've ever done as this organization and come back to us. Yeah? So then they're going to come back and go, these guys are selling a pretty crazy ass story. One that I love, by the way. Like, but it's true, isn't it? I mean,
No, it's true.
They're not all going to sit there with the rugs pulled over their eyes and go, it's a threat. We've got to listen to him. It's all about, it's just not that simple, man. Like, they must know this shit.
Well, I think they know, and I think it's probably, and this is my two cents, I think that they're probably in there, and I think that they've hinted around from the other interviews they've said is like, we couldn't get it done inside. Like, there's that wall they hit, that evangelical Christian top that was just like, absolutely not. We're not going to talk about any of this shit. So I think that what they came up with the plan is like, we're going out. We know exactly what we need to do. We know what buttons we need to push. We know the people we need to get a hold of. We need to do this. And then when we do that, maybe we can come back.
Yeah, maybe the idea is to go out and then back in again.
Right, and then the effect change, or maybe they never left, you know what I mean? Lou Elizondo never lost his clearance.
He said that, says that, doesn't he? Yeah.
You know, all this stuff, it's like, we just need to do it more publicly and just get other people more riled up about it. And if Tom DeLonge is going to be the guy, he's just the guy, you know, like, to make it happen. I mean, there's always been guys, and Grant Cameron talks about all this time about
messiahs.
There's all kinds of programs happening all the time, and not to say this Holden guy isn't, but... You know, there's always the disinformation part of that whole thing, too. I mean,
there always is.
There's always the way to, like, try to push you off into something where you should not focus on. There's always that, let's talk to these people that are getting out to other people and give them some bullshit just so that they can spit that out to everybody else and trail us off on the trail, you know. And I'm just not saying he is, Jay, and I know you're smart I know you're smart enough to know which way goes, man.
I'm smart, but I'm not intelligence community smart. So, you know, there is always that risk. But like I said before, one of the main things really, and he said this as well, is, you know, he spent so much time communicating with me. And so far, I haven't been manipulated into opinions that I didn't have before, at least not knowingly. And nobody's called me out saying, hey, you're peddling BS on your channel. Like I do, so far, so good, it seems. Mm-hmm. So I don't get the indication that he's trying to do that. I mean, I could be wrong, but for me personally, just because of the amount of time and effort it has taken for him to kind of talk to me about different subjects and, you know, provide evidence and links and different ways in which to kind of encourage and bolster my kind of opinion of him, it just seems unreasonable at this point to think that. But obviously you have to remain guarded, of course you do, you know.
Mm-hmm. It is a coordinated push, like the narratives are all starting to come into one place. And like, I mean, there's certain players online too who they're also pushing stuff out there in different ways, and they appeal to different demographics of people, even within the UFO community. Mm-hmm. But if the message all starts to collide in one place, coming from various different sources, like the word's been put out. I don't know. I mean, I'm just the guy in a room on the internet, but it's what it feels like after all these years like it feels like the word's been put out and people are getting fed what could potentially be a real story.
Question time. Why has Tucker Carlson been chosen as the kind of flag bearer of disclosure for the mainstream media?
I think he's, and like you said, that there's different, there's people like, there's people that I know, and I hate to say this, but like in America, there's, it's really divided. We talked about this earlier. So there's people that just are right or left, and people that would just, if it wasn't on Fox News, it wasn't real. Like everything, honestly, it was like, because Trump pushed that for so long. Like if it wasn't on Fox, it was just fake news. It wasn't real. So I think that you have that, that you're preaching to that demographic. It's the people that, that wouldn't believe anything else. Unless it was, but if it's on Fox News, I got a friend that I send him stuff when it comes to UFOs, just on Fox. Cause if I send it the CNN link, same story. He's like, that's bullshit. I sent it to him from Fox News. He's like, oh wow, it's real. And it's just like, dude, it's the same exact story. It's just the same thing.
That is crazy.
So
that
I think you're right, Jean-Luc. I think it's like, so there's people like, you know, you got the right wing people, you got this, you got the spiritual people, you got the Bledsoes, you got everybody that's in all these different demographics. I mean, hell, there's one of this thing that I was really excited about that I saw earlier this week was there was a lady that put out the channel. There's a video that says black people do see UFOs.
Yeah.
And I thought that was amazing. You know what I mean? Because the demographic is just a white guy for most of it. Mostly. I mean, there's a few women, well, obviously,
but
yeah, right. Like
look around right now.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, there's definitely, I mean, what would you try to do to get a message across to everybody? You get, I mean, do you do kids? You do, you know, different religious beliefs, different ethnicities, different, you know, what cultures, different, you go through the whole list, you know?
Because that's the thing. It has been experienced by, I would imagine it's been experienced by probably one, at least one person from every single type of background in the world. At least one person has probably had some form of phenomenal experience, something with the phenomena, something with the paranormal. So, you know, it's not just restricted to certain people. Definitely not.
But it's like different levels of belief, isn't it? It's like, you know, like in my town, like where I grew up, small town, every Tuesday or maybe every second Tuesday, I could go down and sit in a spiritualist church with 40 women and a couple of guys all over the age of about 50, all believe they were psychic, or all believe they're in a, and that, you know, spiritualist churches are everywhere in the UK. Maybe not so much as they were. But I couldn't go down the street and then go in and go to a UFO club like with 40 people. But I suppose that's on the internet. So what I'm trying to say is like, but some levels of kookiness are completely acceptable to the point, and always have been, to the point that they've got a place in every town that people can go visit.
That's so true.
And, you know, prior to that, they, you know, they had churches to go to do that too.
Yeah.
Or whatever faith is, like, It's just a new one, man. And they've tried to do it in the '50s with the Adamski stuff. Tried to do it in the '70s, and they're doing it now.
That's so true, though, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's like you've got these designated buildings where you can go and converse non-locally through essentially through like consciousness CE5, like, you know, like in a church, and have, and some people speak in tongues and get overtaken by the spirit, and that's all acceptable within our cultural fabric. But things that are actually of a very similar thread are then completely thrown out as as no, that's not possible. And that is an extremely, you know, it's extremely interesting thing that happens with human consciousness and like each individual cognitive behavior going there, because there's, you know, what's the difference between these things? You know, what is the difference? Well, there isn't any. There is no difference. You know, and I mean, I think it was Lou Elizondo that said that paranormal is just quantum mechanics that we haven't understood yet. You know, and that's true.
It's totally it. I think that's it. I mean, you know, we're living in a time now where, like we said earlier, I mean, it's everything's instant. You know, everything is instant now. And if quantum entanglement is a real thing, and you know, obviously it is through science and other things, then, you know, if you can reach millions and millions of people quicker, faster, instantaneously through the internet, I mean, you could really work some kind of magic.
Another thought I had, which fits perfectly with that, is essentially we live in an age now where majority of people in the Western world are literate, all right, they can read.
Mm-hmm.
Most governments, I know the British government have had an initiative for a number of years where it's a human right to have a fast connection to the internet.
Wow.
All right? So it becomes like, I guess, the point where if you haven't got a fast connection to the internet, blah, blah, blah. So everyone's literate. right? We're all on the internet. We've all got fast connections. We've got the internet's now been around long enough to just be full of basically every part of human knowledge, right?
Mm-hmm.
So secret societies, for example. So if you're into early Rosicrucianism, you were a Knights Templar, any of that sort of stuff, to know about that prior to probably 50 years ago, less, 30, 20, I don't know, 30. Like, you're never going to know. You might get a library from your local book. You might travel down to London and be able to get access to a couple of books in the British Library. You know, you might be a Freemason, so you've got some access to in the local lodges, some, you know, but that's the only way you're going to find out. So the reality is now, like, most people can go online and they're not going to get all the secrets that have always been there, but first, they can read. Second, they've got everything. So anybody that wants to suddenly learn about alchemy and Egyptian ritual magic or all this stuff like Sumerians, right, it's all there, yeah? Mm-hmm. So we can actually see it. And all three of us, you know, like, you know, everything I've learned is from a book that I've probably ordered on the internet that's been delivered to my house, or it's something I've read online on Kindle, or it's on a website. Everything. But, you know, even when I was growing up, like, I couldn't have done any of that. I didn't have any idea about any of this. But now we've got literally, I'll post something up on Twitter, you know, and I don't get huge responses, but like, you can see though that hundreds of people have read it. So all of a sudden, like, someone's now open to the idea of Mithraism, or they're now open to the idea that Jung archetypes and all this stuff that was, you know, really exclusive knowledge is no longer exclusive.
Underneath the vast sea of porn and cat videos, there is a treasure trove of vital information for humanity.
I've got two computers. One of them's there. Yeah, no.
No, you're right, though. You're right.
It's true. So, like, all of a sudden, we all suddenly become novices in a vast initiation. So if there is an alien knowledge and it's virtual and it's the internet, mate, I'll tell you what, like, Christ, like, if you have this, if we had a time machine, I'd love to go back and interview myself in 1993 before I'd ever seen an internet. And I was obviously much younger and more dynamically beautiful, but like, but I would never have even heard of alchemy.
No, I got real lucky when I grew up. My dad, like, saw UFOs in the 50s, and Jean-Luc and, you know, we talked about that. My dad saw them, so I grew up with the belief that it was real. Like, for me, it wasn't a thing that it was, you know, kooky and you know. But the only way I experienced that is when you talked about it to somebody who didn't have the experience or didn't believe in it. They were kind of like, okay, dude, you're kind of out there or whatever. But, you know, growing up, like, literally, like, 5, 6, 7, I remember, you know, watching TV shows, books. My dad would get magazines, you know, VHS. Like, I just knew, you know, like, it was just a thing.
Nice, man. You hit the ground with a head start.
Yeah. And you know, and I think that, in the 90s, when the 90s kind of explosion started happening, when you got a lot more, here in America anyway, you got more press, you got more TV shows and the X-Files and all that, you know, all that stuff started coming out. I mean, it started getting ingrained into society where it's just a thing. But like you said, dude, 93 for, you know, for most kids, forget it. You know, there's no way you'd see any of that, you know? So, I mean, the collective conscious, I think, probably starting to absorb it now where it's not a big deal. But before, people just lose their minds, right?
Maybe, like, when you think about, like, you know, people have been, I don't want to talk about monoliths, by the way, but let's talk about the Kubrick-style monolith, like, the idea that certain things happen and the human race expands. Now,
like, milestones, like, there's, like, or like, one event.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, Kubrick, you know, the concept that the monolith appears at times when the human race needs a kick up the arse,
mm-hmm,
or a helping hand to move to the next stage. So, you know, the start of 2001, the monolith appears. They are given the idea that they can actually now use the bones of the things they've killed as tools to kill things faster.
Right.
Essentially, and become more creative.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert, yeah.
Oh, dear. Oops, I'm sorry. I'm spoiled too fast.
That movie came out in like 70, what? 60? Right. Yeah. If you haven't watched it, that's your fault, man. Too bad.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. I won't totally spoil it. But then later on, obviously, monolith reappears and people get smarter in different ways. But, like, you know, if that concept that suddenly something appears and it makes us smarter. There's the internet right there.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah, man.
Weirdly, did Jack Valley have something to do with the very start of all that?
I swear he did.
Yeah, he did. Yep, ARPANET. He started ARPANET.
Yeah.
I'm the IT nerd over here. Yeah, so he started that, and that was basically for the government to talk to each other when, if shit went south in America, how would they communicate if you took out this part or this part? And still to this day, and they still use part of it. It's crazy. Like every 50 miles, and I could be wrong, it might be 100, but there's this giant tower, and I think it's about 4 or 5 stories, maybe bigger, solid brick, huge foundation, giant, we called them fire towers when we were kids, but it's just a giant, it looks like a monolith, right? But it's, you know, it's a square straight up, and it's just the top of it's just full of microwave dishes and a bunch of shit. And the idea is that from this tower, 50 miles in whatever direction, can talk to this tower, and then you can talk to the entire United States through the military or, you know, that channel. And I think that's kind of ARPANET, the way that that's built, is you're beaming microwave data through this thing, and then a 50 miles versus this thing. So if you look, there's in the middle of nowhere, like there's one by the state forest by me. It's just giant tower out of nowhere with this all this crazy stuff, and you know, the big government chain link fence around it, and you can't get near it and stuff. And then 50 miles in any direction, there's another one. So he had his hand in developing that, because if like nuclear war, you know, if the Russians were to bomb us or whatever, and everything's taken out, we still had to have a way to talk to somebody across the country. And you know, Jacques had his hand doing all of that, and that's how we kind of started, you know, that whole thing, which is nuts, man.
Whoa. That is nuts.
Jack's interesting.
Go on, John.
Jack Valley, you know, the fact that he's an interesting chap, isn't he? Like, he's, you know, his own quote is essentially that when, I can't remember what the exact quote is, but when he starts to deal with the American government about the phenomenon, he very quickly realized that he knew a lot more than they did, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
That says a lot to me. It says a lot to me about what someone like Jacques Vallée truly knows and is allowed to say. And in terms of like dissemination, you know, like going back again to this idea that they tried before, he was the 70s guy, wasn't he? He was the guy helping Spielberg with Close Encounters. And he was the guy sort of, I don't know. Got a lot of respect for him.
He's like the godfather of all of this.
Yeah, I can't remember if I said this to you, Jean, but I swear it was something along the lines of, I feel like Jacques Vallée is almost like the Neil deGrasse Tyson for ufology. Like, he's that guy that knows more, won't say enough, like, you know, like kind of like you wish he wouldn't. And like, I know some people in the UFO community don't like NDT. That wasn't me saying that, you know, that these two characters are exactly alike. It's just this kind of idea that you've got this almost spokesperson for this community, and you know that they know more. And I have a feeling with Jacques Vallée, and some people weren't happy that he was dropping his book into the Joe Rogan podcast that these guys did, but I'm genuinely pretty excited to read that book, to see what he's got to say in it, because he was, you know, hinting that there's going to be some pretty explosive information in there. But at the same time, I kind of wish he'd just said it on the Joe Rogan Experience.
I don't think he can. I don't think he can either.
Yeah.
I know Joe Rogan does like a dinner beforehand or, you know, before they go on the show, but I don't think that was properly discussed. I think Jacques Vallée has been in and is still in the deepest part of the government, the part where, like, I mean, when you want to talk about the top stuff, I'm sure he has clearances still that are just that we can't even understand, right? I think that he's because he's an American citizen now. So I think he's to the point where he can't say shit. He's another one of those guys that he's going to get thrown away, and he's 80 something, right? I mean, until he gets to the point where he doesn't care, he's still got to worry about them taking his family out, or you know what I mean, or something crazy like that.
I don't think he has to worry about that. I personally don't think he has to worry about that. Like, because when you look at for example, what's recently been on TV with the Project Blue Book drama series, you know, like the dramatized one. Like the idea that you had Alan Hynek working, hired by people who knew there was something weird going on to debunk what was going on, to, you know, that's the idea of the TV show anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so that's out there publicly now. And then his old assistant, Hynek's assistant, said that he was a Rosicrucian.
Yeah.
Jacques Vallée, on meeting Hynek, apparently said, I too I know the Rosicrucian arts, right? So again, you've got this common theme running through it all. All of these people that have the secrets, the ones that are trying to tell Jay secrets, the ones that are turning up on the doorstep of the place are trying to tell them secrets. It all leads back to the same types of societies, yeah? So I think in terms of people being worried about, you know, being in trouble for saying stuff, like, I think that, like, valet and stuff know a hell of a lot more about what's going on. Top of the tree, you know, and that's not a bad thing, but he's just, he can't, I'm speculating, obviously, what do I know? But that's how it feels to me.
I agree.
I kind of feel like the public the better these days, you know, put yourself out in a spotlight, let everyone know who you are, and then tell all the secrets. Because, I mean, you know, if they're going to do anything to you after that, it's going to be so obvious.
That was Bob Lazar's deal, right? I mean, people say Bob, there's so many people divided about Bob Lazar, right? But legitimately, the dude was afraid that he was going to get killed.
Yeah, yeah.
And that
sure.
He did that as an insurance policy to be like, yeah. I don't want to die. I'm telling you what I know because they're going to kill me. They're trying to kill me. They've tried to kill me. They're still going to try to kill me, but blah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, I mean, I understand, obviously, there's a huge amount of risk, but it would be quite nice to have some of these guys say some sort of amazing statements and finish it off with, and if anything is to happen to me in the next, you know, few months or year, I want, you know, I did not do that.
Yeah,
you know,
right,
basically, right. Someone got me. Mm-hmm. And I think that would probably be enough of a deterrent. You know, especially if they're so public, like someone like Lou or Chris, you know, you can't just take someone like this out. Everyone will be asking questions. Well, maybe you can. I don't know.
Maybe. Whoa. I mean, what was the thing that with Bledsoe, one of the interviews that with Ryan, I think he said that, you know, why is he coming out and why is he talking about it? Because he was scared. And that was kind of the impetus for Jean-Luc and I to talk, because I watched that and I kind of got twisted because I was like, man, I really came out and started talking because I figured that shit was done. Like the bad guys, that part was like, you know, I'm not going to get tearing out of here and you know, put it in somewhere. But he said that that I think it was Tyler or somebody, I don't know if he said Tyler specifically, but I think he was hitting at it, that came to him and said, hey, 6 years ago we would have just put a bullet in your head, but let me show you the slideshow. This is
I mean, Tyler, like, you know, I don't know, it's hard to marry up this character Tyler because the pictures are out there of who he is,
right?
And he seems like a lot of nice guy. I mean, like, you know, he wrote a book about his time in rocket engineering working for NASA, and also about, like, you know, how he was having these great ideas, and about, you know, it's a good book, man, but it's not really related to this. It's related to his life before this.
Mm-hmm.
Family guy, you know, but he's essentially was an engineer, like, and you know, got into like the science stuff through these revelationary experiences. So for him to suddenly get into a position where he's telling people that we would have wiped you out, I mean, I don't want to, was it him that said that?
I don't know.
And then spending time with Dan Pasulka, it looks like they have like a really nice kind of, not a let's wipe people out time. It's a weird one, man. Like,
well, we should make it clear. We're not saying we know that is what he said.
No, not at all. I'm not saying that. No. I'm just saying that during that time frame, all that stuff happened. That somebody came to him and said, you know, hey, this is what we were doing.
I will add, though, that my only experience, even though not directly, just indirectly, my only experience with negative or threatening people has been since I did the Chris Bledsoe interview.
Because, oh, shit. Really?
Not to me directly, but the kind of weird controversy over getting the images taken down, and then they were quite concerned, and they were getting messages that they didn't like, and they were telling me I need to, you know, blur these images because of the, you know, the messages they're getting. So that's my only experience with ever, like, I've never had, other than, you know, trolls online, I've never had directly anyone trying to threaten me or make me feel uncomfortable. So something seems to be happening with the Bledsoe family, you know. It does seem to be happening. But he said it in my interview as well, that since 2016 there has been a noticeable change in how people have interacted with his family, and especially like within intelligence, and, you know, the threatening messages and the threatening people have for the most part subsided away, and that he feels, you know, Chris said he feels quite protected, that he knows who he could call if he was in trouble.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's, like you said, but Ryan said the same thing, that there's those different levels, right? Not all of them are, there's not a unified message.
Is. Yeah, no, there isn't. There's these weird levels where people are still making threats, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's
Which
strange.
Is weird. It's like, what are they on then? I mean, what is their twist to this whole thing? Is it, is it the right wing evangelical Christian side that's doing the threatening, or is it like the dark magic? We want to bring about, we want Crowley back to pop open the portal. Like, I don't like.
Well, I think when it came to at least specifically what was happening with my interview, it was more to do with affiliates. I don't want to speak in absolutes, but just kind of like third party affiliates of Diana Pasolka, who were not happy about, you know, certain images that had certain information about Diana on those images being public, even though from my understanding those images were public. I just don't think that they were as public before, you know, going onto an interview with a few thousand people watching it was more public than the image that was already online. So I assumed that was the issue, because it seemed to be around that, but I don't think it was anything scarier than that. I think it was more to do with personal information and the right to kind of, you know, keep that stuff private if they wanted to.
So what I mean Diana Pasolka, I mean, I've like, really good book, I love it. But the story, it's like when I first started to find out about her was when there was drama about stuff that she posted up online, which she then removed and said that she'd had her account hacked. And that stuff was explicit, man. Like,
yeah,
it was in terms of what we're talking about. Like, you know, I mean, she said it wasn't true, but then in the Lex Fridman, I can't remember which interview it was. There was an interview where she said, well, essentially, like, some of that stuff that was put onto the tweets was taken from hacked emails. Okay, so like, she might have written some of those things, but they were then put out from a hacked email onto a tweet, okay, via her own account. I don't know. but that stuff, like, you know, the president's looking at the moon at least once in their time as president. The stuff about, you know, directly talking about TTSA and their influences of Freemasons, it's all there. I mean, like,
they were very specific posts, and they were technically within the roster of what she looks into. You know, I don't think it's too far outside of the scope to say that they're probably legit real emails and real tweets even. And she wasn't hacked, and she's probably said that to save face. I don't know if that's true, but that just seems to be the case.
Well, mate, it's fair to speculate. Like, if you're interested in these cases, then that's what we should be doing. Like, because the reality of it is like, you know what, man? Like, I've been called out on it by a few people that I get obsessed by all these links, but they're so tangible. Mm-hmm. Like, if you actually look at it and investigate it, they're just so tangible and so clear. And that should be more of the focus. It's like, seriously, it's like a lot of that stuff, the people that are involved in this that actually have a voice, that gets taken down very quickly, man. Like, it's starting to seep through because so many people are starting to say it now, but for a long time, you went down that route, you get shut down. People didn't want to hear it. And that was, I guess, because it was like a fanboy thing almost for TTSA. They were like, it can't be, don't put a negative spin on it. But at the same time, I think there's also something fueling that. So I think, you know, in terms of two sides, in terms of what gets into your mind and the message that's coming, there's a side that's saying, never look at that side of it. There's no occult practice. There's none of that. It's UFOs, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I don't think they can hide it anymore. If you're into mainstream ufology, which this is now, like the crossover of the spirituality and all that kind of stuff, and also blending into like the ancient alien stuff, because that it does seem to start filtering into that too. It's really weird, man. Like,
there's no separation anymore, man. It's like religion, spirituality, consciousness, nuts and bolts. It's aliens. It's UFOs. It's all of this stuff, and it's all just getting pushed back. You know, it's like a coffee press. You put it all in there, and then you start pushing it down, and everything's all in the middle, man. I think that's kind of what it is. It's probably a really big thing to get all of these separate things, like the dark series, like the time travel thing, like any of these things that you wouldn't necessarily go, oh, I saw a UFO. Oh, that means I can go outside and have meditate and have a direct connection with them. Like, nobody, like 5 years ago, dude, tell me that, would be like, no. I mean, you know, or any of this stuff, or I can travel in time, or like, you know, none of that stuff kind of gets pushed together, and it I feel like they're trying to do it to just put it all together. It's kind of the same thing. It's all related. And how do you do that? How do you get people that just believe in one thing? Like you said, that if you're a TTSA fanboy and you can't say anything negative about it, how do you get the people that are on the other side of the fence together? How do you do it?
Well, I mean, again, like, in terms of, like, you know, TTSA is a perfect example of that, like we said. you've got two sides, which could be completely different organizations. One creating spiritual literature and fiction, and one that's attending Senate meetings and, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's two very, very different sides of the one coin. And it's like, it's I don't know. And that's why, to me, it feels more genuine. Not TTSA, but the whole message that's coming out now, like something's building, all right? Now, I think that, like, personally, and I think that we've touched on this before, but if you believe in the fact that we are all one consciousness, the, you know, the act of meditation and that kind of thing, like, you know, you if you get to that point where you can enter into that as one thing and you see everything is connected, all of a sudden aliens and other people and other things, you know, if you take it down that kind of thought process, they're all the same thing anyway. So, like, to be able to contact an alien is literally contacting yourself. I know it's different because they're not physically manifested, but if they're all part of the same group consciousness and you can contact them through accessing that, and we're all self-creating anyway, they're all eyes of one being.
Well, this is the next level of the discussion, and when will we ever hear the fact that we are the phenomenon as well? You know, because we're not separate from this. We're not just some random human thing that's got all this other stuff that's called the phenomenon happening around it. We're a part of that phenomenon, and that we just haven't fully understood our role within that. And you know, I think that. Because I've always wondered about, like, I almost resent, like, the term the phenomenon. It's like you're separating so much stuff away from us as well. Because, and I have to say, from my own personal origin story into coming into this, the prerequisite to me making Project Unity, or the precursor more like, was conscious contact, was actually having a few very intense experiences that couldn't have been brought on, in my opinion, through any other modality than the conscious coherent thoughts that I was actually putting out there and asking for something to arrive. Because, you know, it would have to be the most ridiculous coincidence for these things to be turning up on multiple occasions and, you know, me seeing them whilst also in my mind trying to make that happen, if that wasn't actually what was making that contact happen. So for me, it's kind of like, you know, we're a part of this. Like we were saying before, we're entangled with everything in the universe to a fundamental level, at like the energy level. We are all entangled. And it's just this, you know, this idea of everything at the fundamental level is a single energy. It's just being represented through a infinite spectrum of different variations and, you know, changes in frequency and spin rate and all the different stuff that's creating the physical world around us.
And that's our problem, isn't it? Like, that we're stuck on one frequency. Most people can't see the other frequencies.
Absolutely. And we're separated. And I think that, you know, speaking at least from the Western philosophy, we have separated ourselves so much from nature, from soul, from spirit. We're this mechanical, you know, this mechanical being in a dead universe, basically. And it's just like, that's not what people experience on an interpersonal and on a subjective level. Like, that's not what people experience through their own personal lives, but it's what people try and tell us is real. And it just, you know, I know, and I can't prove it, you know, I can't prove it to the satisfaction of a scientist. And that's very frustrating to me, but I know that there is a non-local capacity for consciousness. I know that there is, because of my experiences. I would love scientists to now try and prove that for me. I can't do that. I don't have the right brain. So if they could please stop making fun of me and just do the work, I would really love to know the answers, you know?
Yeah,
that's it. I mean, but you know, like, you have guys like Putoff, who's been devoted almost his entire life to almost do that, you know?
Absolutely.
And supposedly he's a Rosicrucian, or, you know, I mean, here we go again, you know? This is weird, and I've said it before, but, you know, going back to that, like, why are these people at the top, or why, what's going on? It's not that, and this sounds really, really weird, right? But what doesn't? Anyway, when I became a Mason, my big deal was, like, I'm going to go in here, because, you know, I read all the Jim Mars books, and I'm like, I'm just going to go figure this all out, and I'm going to tell everybody about their whole plans for world domination, and I'm going to spread the message of, you know, what they're going to do. And then, like, I went through my first degree, and, like, I was, there's a call and response part where when somebody will, you don't know what to say because you're just going through it and somebody like basically talks for you. But like, I knew the responses, which was weird. You know, there still was the internet. I didn't go through and like, I didn't want to go through and say, you know, I knew all this stuff. I mean, the stuff that I was responding to wasn't anywhere that I could find. And it was like, I felt like I was back. I felt like I'd always been a Mason. I felt like I was just coming back. And you know, one of the things is in Masonry is that, you know, you don't die. It's just, you know, where we go, you go, they call it the great architect of the universe, you know, the one, you know, the person that everything, and it's just like when we do a Masonic funeral, it's the most amazing thing. You know, it's sad for everybody, but we, as Masons, kind of lay it all out for the family, like things that we're not supposed to say to the public and, you know, things like that. And we do just kind of just give it out, like, just like, hey, look, we believe in the immortality of the soul. We're Masons, you know, we're going back to the architect. We'll come back again. You know, it's no big deal. Here it is, you know. So it was weird for me to kind of, and I've never believed fully in like reincarnation and things like that, and I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that somehow something in me, you know, whatever, like I just what I was supposed to be, you know.
Yeah,
I feel you, man. Like to start with me, I was, you know, I've talked to both of you privately, you know, on different occasions about the connection to my granddad, like,
yeah,
know about him, and then stuff, you know, I find out, you know, like Masonic connections all the way down, like through generations. Like, it's all been forgotten in my family or not been talked about, or, you know, it's weird. So
yeah, you're a fascinating guy, man. You are a fascinating individual, and your family is fascinating as well.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks. Yeah, it really is. No, it is. It's interesting story.
Well, it is. It's interesting to me because it gave me something in my family. Because you were saying before about your dad being to UFOs and everything, John.
Yeah.
And that, you know, my dad wasn't. But like, but my granddad kind of, well, he wasn't interested in UFOs, but he was interested in some kooky stuff, yeah? So that was like, he was, I guess, my outlet. And a lot of my experiences, I guess, have been easier by taking his advice from, you know, and again, like from pieces of letters and manuscripts that I found after his death. It's weird, man, that sometimes stuff starts to permeate into your life, and it starts to permeate in every way, and you don't know why until you know why.
Yeah. Well, and you know, one thing that all three of us have in common is we've all had an experience with something in the sky. We all saw something, yeah, that we didn't wrap our heads around. I mean, me being, you know, growing up that way, I mean, my whole life, I'm like, where is it? I want to see it. My dad's all, you know, where is it? Whatever it is. And I took my daughter, my 2-year-old daughter, to tell me to lay down and look up, dad. And I'm like, what the hell are you doing? And I look up and there's this white orb above the house. And I'm like, this is insane. She's like, yeah, it's there. You know, like, no big deal. And then my 10-year-old daughter comes out and she's like, look over there. And there's another one. It's like, these kids, you know, they see it and they, like, whatever, they're tuned into it. But, you know, and I saw orange orbs with my wife before that, you know.
You know, I think it's just because they haven't been here for as long as us, man. I think kids just haven't been in the dream for as long as we have. They're not fooled, you know, as easily by it, because we, you know, after years and years and years of normal physical reality, linear time and jobs and taxes, you start going, yeah, life's a boring piece of shit and there's no magic there's no magic in it, it's all just, you know, it's books and fairy tales. But no, like, there is genuine magic, you're just not looking at it.
Yeah. But that's where the magic is, in the magic, right?
Yeah, you know,
the fact that a lot of times happens when you're miserable, when life is life is just brown envelopes with bills incoming through your door and all the crap that you have to go through. Like, you know, like, you hear it all the time, and it strikes a chord with me, like, that this stuff gets amplified through pain, through turmoil. And again, like, you know, as a on an individual level, it happens. Now take it to a global level, mm-hmm, see what happens. And that, you know, prompts awakening.
Yeah.
So you think it perhaps awakened in a way to spin us back to the positive?
Yeah, like, so, yeah, almost like, because for me, what it did, like, it feels weird talking about this, but like, it feels, you know, and it's cool. Like,
you look behind you then as if someone was going to come in and kill you.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah,
no, you're my wife, man.
Like, your wife, yeah, that's why I'm always looking at her. She's standing here with a frying pan. Just ready to get
I must have been a nightmare for her, because when I went through, like, kind of when it started again for me, when I started to, I don't know, get into the woo, mm-hmm, experience the woo, like the crazy stuff, like, I thought I was mad, like, I thought I was going insane. And it took me a long time to reconcile the fact that kind of was in certain things that I could like kind of, well, the fact that the actual visual sightings had either been caught on film or were with other people. So that made it easier. But like, but the other stuff, like the sort of the psychic stuff, I guess, that was, not that I'm saying I am, it's not like that, but certain things that happened, they happened off the back of pain, you know, like, you know, turmoil. And it's very real. And as time goes by, like, you know, like, and, you know, I reconcile what happened with me in terms of, I guess, my psyche and stuff. I've become, like, a lot more confident in myself. I've become spiritual, like, to a degree. Well, I have, man. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I've woke up and I've remembered what it was like to feel as a kid, like wonder. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it just gave me something back, man. It gave me something back.
Everything you're saying, I resonate with. I feel the exact same. You know, I just wanted to echo that because everything that I'm doing came from a massive depression in my life. Like everything that I'm doing right now that I'm interested in, and the spiritual growth that I feel like I've had, the personal growth, the growth in confidence, it all stemmed from a major depressive point in my life, where I was looking for answers and didn't have any, and was slowly given them over a strange, windy course of synchronicities. And you have to pay attention. I'm sure that there was loads of signs I missed throughout the time that I was asking for, you know, the universe to help out, and it definitely did. There are such solid signs in my life of over the past couple of years of like, oh right, yeah, that feels like such a direct like attraction of what I wanted. But I'm sure that there was so many I missed. I feel like there's always signs popping up, and it's just whether or not you are, you know, you gain that intuition to pay attention to it in your life. And you're right. I think depressive events do lead these things. And I think the only reason, or one of the reasons why depressions lead into this, is because it's the only way it can lead, you know, it's up, down, yin yang. You know, once you've been in a depression, it's time to come back up again. So whatever that's going to be, it's going to be something you've got. I think that's a good takeaway for people, is that if you're, you know, if you're having a turbulent situation, it is going to lead to something else. Nothing goes downhill forever. Nothing goes uphill forever. Life is full of up and down for the reason that it crafts experience.
It just makes you stronger. It does.
Yes, yeah, it does. You know, life's hard, man. Life's a bitch. Yeah. But it's also something that can give you such profound, you know, love, and you can experience the ability to be someone that you want to be, and to, you know, live the life that you feel that you should be living and treat people the way you should treat them. But you have to get through a very kind of, I don't know, you have to go through a lot of learning to get to that point. And all of us are still trying to get to that point. You know, I could probably name a dozen things off the top of my head over the past week where I shouldn't have thought that way, or I shouldn't have done that, or this, you know. So we're all still growing as people, but it just seems to be that life is about ups and downs. If you remove all of the downs, then all there is up, and then you don't even know you're going up because all there is up. So it's just nothing then. It's just blank. So you have to have it.
what does Jacques Vallée say about the control mechanism? Or they're here to teach us? I can't remember. One of the things I think he said during Rogan, but he said it multiple times, is that it's I don't know if it's a control mechanism or it's a... they're teaching us something. I think that's kind of one of his messages, right? It's like
he said something along the lines of that this phenomenon could be looked at as an omnipresent energy that has the ability to focalize itself in an array of different ways in order to teach us something.
Well, I can't believe you remembered that. That's
brilliant. Well, there it is. Thank you, Jim.
It might be something like that.
But it might be something like this.
Drop the mic. That is close to a direct quote.
No, that's,
yeah, that's pretty cool.
No, man. Yeah. No, I think it is. Like, Tim McMillan said something weird a few weeks ago, or something that it was something to do with the Roswell crash. And I thought that, and it's still kind of profound when I think about it. He said that
perceptions change.
Yeah, he said that whatever the craft was, or whatever the thing they had, it was sitting in a hangar. Like, I would look at it and it was a disc, but you would look at it, it was a teardrop, or you looked at it, it was a basketball, you know. And it's like, it's whatever you need it to be, is what it is,
and yet still a physical structure, still has some form of engineering to it. Does it, you know, like, is this a, this is where it gets almost into what I would call, and you know, some people would hate this, but I would call it like almost soul technology or spirit technology, where you've got this strange metaphysical structure that can change and shift into all sorts of different things, and essentially, you know, collapse and expand its wave function capabilities by turning solid and then turning into something else, and you got to wonder what the heck, what is going on there.
Transmutation of like everything.
It's like alchemy to the top, to the
universal alchemy.
You know, and like, you know, we've always, even from the Secret Machines books and some of the other things, and even some of the you know, whatever, anything, is just that, you know, there's no, to pilot the craft or whatever, the craft is a living entity. The craft is part of consciousness. I mean, you need to be connected to consciousness. And I remember going back, you know, I geeked out that, you know, the F-35, you ever seen the helmets on an F-35 airplane, is they're like $400,000 or $500,000, because they have electrodes all the way through the top of the helmet that they connect to the pilot, and the pilot, when the pilot gets amped up and, you know, your emotions and you're just getting excited, it can increase the throttle of the airplane. When you get scared or whatever, you pull back, it'll drop the throttle. I mean, it has all these things, and it's really classified. I've only seen a couple of things about it, but I mean, if you think about that, I mean, you're basically one with this multi-billion dollar aircraft, right?
If you think about it, you know, we've all got this electromagnetic signature around our bodies. Each one of us has, and you know, this is what I believe, this is what the spiritual people would call an aura. And it is literally your electromagnetic field around your body. And I guess the people who see auras can literally just have the ability, slightly more sensitive ability, to see the actual, you know, coronal discharge around you from your own electromagnetic field. But this electromagnetic field is like a signature. It's like a fingerprint, you know? Mm-hmm. And so perhaps, and there have been people that have said this and made these claims, but perhaps there is some reality to some of these craft are essentially matched to the person or the being's individual electromagnetic signature. And so you can't even pilot it unless you're that being. And so it very much is like the craft becomes you, because without your actual energy, without your either EMF or your aura, whichever way you want to do it, you know, physics or metaphysics, it's both the same stuff at the end of the day. It's just one's more controversial than the other. You know, that could essentially be what's going on there, is you're just matching the signature of someone's you know, electricity to the craft.
Yeah, it was Jean-Luc, you posted the other day, and I saw at the same exact time that you posted it, where the researcher just came out that they saw that birds, it was like the visual of what birds can see when they were magnetically, they could see the magnetic.
They're essentially seeing exactly this, aren't they?
Like, yeah, they're seeing, like, so for migration and things, they could see the magnetic, you know,
resonance. This takes, like, into, like, you know, like, you know, the old, the stuff, the Tesla stuff, and the idea of there's this power source, the ether is the power source, and you know, and Vril and all that stuff, like, you know, in terms of this world and like the mythology, or maybe the some of its real history behind it, like that idea of the aura, whether it's an electromagnetic frequency or whatever it may be, it's real, it's there, and some people have tapped into it. And, like, you know, it's crazy. It's almost strange that not more has been done, or we haven't got further with it, because...
Well, maybe we have in secret.
Yeah. No, I'm sure. Oh, I'm positive. I'm totally positive.
Well, as soon as I turn the camera off, I'll levitate outside.
You just see him become a Merkaba of light and just launch out of the window.
My
goodness. Tell me your secrets.
A manor will arrive.
No, I mean, one of the things that I always thought about too, I mean, and then after becoming a Mason and like learning the things and just, you know, doing the research and like kind of looking at it from a different light, was that, and I think the reason, well, one of the reasons to keep everything a secret is not to just put it out there, but I think that at a higher level, I think the institutions of the world pretty much try to keep our innate abilities a secret from us. Totally. Like, you know, like, come to me, I'm the priest guy or whatever, and I can turn this water into wine or, you know, whatever, but you can't.
Yeah, you as an individual person are not capable. You need some sort of third party, which is just, which is bullshit.
Yeah, so I mean, why would you want 8 billion, like, psychically, can do anything that we could possibly do on the planet? You're in control. It would just be
100%.
I reckon that, you know, the reality of it is if everybody woke up to that fact, and if everyone suddenly realized that we're all actually part of the same thing, we actually are all the same thing, you know, in this weird, whatever it is, simulation reality that we live in, I don't know what it is, but the monad again, this idea that we are all one thing, mm-hmm. everyone actually realized that, then you'd never really want to hurt anybody, would you?
No, never. You'd be hurting yourself. Literally, you'd be hurting yourself, yeah.
You're constantly hurting yourself. It's like, you know, I don't really understand how people can't get behind that message. It's such a good message.
Chris Bledsoe had it. I'm sorry, but Chris, it goes back to Bledsoe. He had that thing, too, when he had all these experiences. He was like a world record hunt, not world record, but state record. He shot like the biggest bear in his state. He did all this stuff. And now he's like, I can't even squish a spider. He's like, I can't do, like, I have to pick up bugs and take them outside. Like, I don't do that anymore, you know? And a lot of people, when they have those experiences, they're just like, I can't.
I mean, yeah, I'm pretty similar in in that regard. Is I can't, I mean, I wasn't a hunter, but I've noticed over the past couple of years a serious change in how I feel about, you know, other life, especially plants. Like, I've got way more plants growing in my room now than I had before. I just like the idea of helping something grow. Mm-hmm. And that was just not a thought that came into my mind before this. So it precipitates a certain amount of, a certain openness and empathy that you have for other things, because you realize that at some level you are that thing. But one thing I wanted to say is it's still bloody hard because you're human. You know, I mean, I know that at least, you know, my genuine knowing for me personally is we're one energy, right? Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean I don't want to slap someone in the face sometimes. Like, I struggle with the reptilian monkey mind that's going on in my brain. So it's difficult. And I think that it would be amazing to have, humanity on a whole embrace this, but I think it's going to take a bit more than just the realization, because if I'm going from my perspective, I know this stuff's true, but I still mess up. It hasn't turned me into a saint, and it hasn't, I'm sure, turned any of you guys into saints. You know, we all mess up, and so it's a progression of learning. But I have a good feeling that there are certain things that seem to be creeping back in, and as controversial as it may be for some people, the resurgence of research into psychedelics mm-hmm. and natural holistic plant medicines, I think, is actually a really important development, especially when it comes to understanding consciousness to the levels of the mysterious elements of consciousness. Mm-hmm. And I think that coupled with quantum mechanics, quantum physics simulations, quantum computing, a lot of quantum there, but like you know, all of these different emerging technologies and ways of projecting simulations in computers, coupled with these very novel ways of approaching consciousness through psychedelic research, I think it could lead us into this realization that from a scientific level, because it's kind of like we've had religion, science is the new religion, and it really is the new religion, hypothesis is the new faith, and you need these new people to explain it in the language that we use. So we need the scientists to go, right, universal consciousness is real, but here's the science behind it. You know, mm-hmm. until that point, I don't know if the Western world at least is going to embrace this.
Do you know, so the first time a scientist comes out and says, I mean, I believe that that is the case. And it sounds like you do, Jay and John. And
No, I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
But what it does is if somebody actually came out and said that this is the case, we have fundamentally found the answer to this. This is the answer. It's all one consciousness. It flows. You know, your physical body dies, but your energy. You know, all of a sudden, you know, the myth of death is gone.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yep. So
and
like
the fear of it.
Yeah. The fear of it. Well, yeah, you might still be. You might be attached to your
physical yeah.
existence, but at the same time, like. I don't know, this is kind of where I go. It's funny you talk about psychedelics and so on, but like the idea that if that mimics other levels of reality, if you can actually journey and experience and live without a physical body, there's, you know, these are the realities of things. Like if death suddenly becomes something that's not even a thing, and all the suffering, all the pain, all the fear suddenly disappears, and you accept that all you're doing is experiencing reality as a mass, something with mass, and that's part of a process that you have to go through. Like, this is me, just my personal thoughts. Like, all of a sudden, it changes everything.
Yeah,
it changes totally. Everything we think of ourselves as being. And like, and I personally, like, I've gone down this route where, sorry, I'm proper monologuing, but
no, man, go.
Like, you know, this idea, and I really like that it's that Bentoff stuff, the guy who did the Gateway project stuff, and when he talked about that, we're essentially this energy, I guess this electromagnetic frequency maybe, or whatever it is we are, that, and this one consciousness, these energy forces that join together, driving little meat cars. Like, we're literally just a pretty cool but crude robot vehicle to experience a reality and experience ourselves amongst each other as different individuals, but really just as one thing. And, like, you know, that's the internet as well. Like, going back to that concept of the internet, you put these little drones out of one thing and say, experience it in different ways. Mm-hmm. Give me every single variable. I want to know. Learn. That consciousness suddenly starts to just grow, and that's crazy.
Almost as if that is the purpose of his existence. And I'm going to borrow again from Terence McKenna when he had his whole theory of hyper-complexity or hyper-novelty, which is, you know, that the universe's like modus operandi is to literally just get more and more complex, and that humans are just the latest development in that complexity, and that there is a singularity that we're heading towards. And it, you know, to be honest, like, It does kind of echo into what you're saying, and I've totally forgotten what my point was with this, and that's really annoyed me, because I'm now going to ramble, so I'm going to shut up.
No,
that's so annoying.
No. To get into the weird part of this thing, you know, I don't know where I saw it, but obviously it was probably Twitter somewhere. It's like, if DMT, you know, is the pinnacle of this, and get into there, and everybody has, you know, everybody that has psychedelics, you know, eventually sees the machine elves, and everybody describes them exactly the same, even though you can't experience the same thing that I am, but you can experience these machine elves, right? These things. Okay. So that was one of the things. So I thought I heard somewhere that's like, well, what if there's like 100 guys in the US military that are just hooked up intravenously to DMT like all day? That's what they do.
Yeah,
and then they just pull them out of it, and everybody's like, "Yeah, this is what's going on." They just
maybe. I mean, you know, you've got Imperial College London now looking to do exactly that, which is to intravenously map the DMT realm through clinical trials, through basically keeping people on a drip. So, I mean, you know, if academic institutions are now looking at doing this, you've probably got to imagine that the military's already done it.
Probably 40 years ago, right?
Yeah, 40 years ago.
Yeah. I can't remember. It might have been in Jim Mars, or I can't remember which one, but it was about our remote viewers mm-hmm. trying to access military compounds and bases, places it shouldn't be. So they're out there in their, I don't know what a remote viewing terminology would be, but the astral, I guess. Mm-hmm. They're traveling without moving. They're transcendentally traveling. And they're seeing stuff, but then they're being approached by beings in the astral saying, get the fuck away, yeah?
Yeah.
They were literally, like, you know, again, it's stories, but cool stories.
Yeah, there's a few stories like that.
So the idea that there's people that are put into induced states of the right state in terms of like Gateway, where you're literally there constantly in this alpha state. And yeah, like taking people on, warning them off, you can't come here. Yeah? You know, and the idea of, well, like a psychic attack, like people like, you know, so many people now talk about remote viewing and going out there and practicing remote viewing. Mm-hmm. And the idea of that opening yourself up and meeting other people in the astral, if you accept that that is actually a reality, and you take away the fact that remote viewing is not just looking at something that other people might be able to see you too, it becomes quite a different thing.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you read stories about remote viewers opening themselves up to entities and to bad forces and...
Well, I mean, you know, I think it's fair to say, at least not from anyone that I've met, none of us are masters of this stuff. And so if there are any people or beings or energies or anything out there that is in some way a, you know, master of this, then yeah, you are swimming out into a big old ocean, and there could be stuff out there that could control you, could manipulate you, could get into your mind. I don't know. I, like, you know, the more I've opened myself up to the fact that consciousness does seem to be this extremely vast, probably infinite experience field. Like, that's how I see it myself in the physical universe. And it's all just basically been manifested through this,
this conscious energy. At the end of the day, it could literally be anything's possible. It could be that anything's possible in some thread of reality. You know, we're just on this tiny little thread of what we think is normal. But let's be honest, if we grew up in a reality where the sky was pink and the ocean was, you know, multicolored, and we wouldn't question that because that's all that we've known. So this to us is normal, but that does not mean that, you know, I really do believe that we're just on a little thread and that there's so many other different realms of reality. Maybe some of them have the ability to pierce into this one, and that's what we call the phenomenon, you know. I don't know, but it's definitely not just this.
No,
if anybody does have the answers, please write in.
Yeah. Comment below, please. Links are nice.
Yeah, please, please. Oh, I'm loving this, by the way, guys. I'm really enjoying this conversation.
It's me too, man. Thank you, guys.
Well, it's quite nice not to be the one interviewing people.
you do a great job, though, man. I really dig your stuff, man. Honestly, man. Ever since I saw you coming out, and I was like, man, this guy, he gets it, man. And I think you come from a place that's just pure, man. And you know,
thank you.
I don't feel like you got an agenda. I don't feel like you're doing anything that's completely pointing to one direction. I think you just feel what's right, and you just go with it, man. And that's what I really appreciate about you.
Thank you.
I totally agree. And if anybody watching, like, because, you know, I've met Jay a number of times, like, he's a totally, like, you know, what you see is what you get. There's nothing more to Jay. So everything that you hear him say, it's real. Okay. Like, he's someone to listen to. He's a cool dude. Both of them, John.
Thank you. Yeah. Oh, you both are awesome. You're both awesome.
Thanks,
we'll have to get you over the waters at some point, John, when we can.
Yeah, my wife's always like, let's go to England. I'm like, okay, right. All right, but now that I will, because you guys are there, but I, you know, before then I was like, I don't know. She's like, why don't you want me to go to Poland, bring my gun.
Our COVID's much more contagious.
Come on. Well, you guys come over here then. Our COVID's less contagious. Come over here. Sure. It's not as bad.
Yeah, we'll come to you.
If you guys ever want to come over here, man, you're more than welcome. I'll give you each a gun. You can go outside and do whatever you want. Man,
I'm not against that. I'd love to go to the firing range. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah. No, it's such a different. It's weird that we all live in the same world, but it's so different. You know,
totally different.
Like you were saying, like you could grow up and the sky's pink. You know, who knows? Yeah. I read something that up until I can't remember what year it was that the color blue wasn't a thing because there was no word for the color blue. So
Tim McMillan mentioned that in my interview with him, actually. He brought up that fact.
I think that's right. Yeah. I think. Yeah. And I was like, that's just bizarre when you think about it, you know, and that's not that long ago.
I remember in that interview, I said something as a joke and it didn't sound like it came across as a joke. And now I'm listening back on it. I'm like, oh, man, I sound so dumb, because he's saying like, oh, there wasn't any evidence of, like, you know, like in literature of the sky being blue. And I said, like, oh, I wonder what color the sky was back then. And I said it in a joke. But
he came back with an answer. He was like, oh, it was like a brown or something.
This is kind of like, well, obviously it was the same color, mate. It just wasn't called that. But oh man, I listened back and I was like, you sound so stupid.
No, dude. No, we're, like you're saying, we're all here to learn and like help each other. Totally. And totally, man, it's been an awesome ride. And honestly, if it wasn't for COVID, I wouldn't have done this. I wouldn't have. I wouldn't have had the time. I wouldn't have done it. You know, I think that went
the time.
Yeah. I think with TTSA and then all that stuff coming out and then, you know, the Bledsoe thing and all that, I just think that was, it's time. I think it's going to happen sooner than we think. Go ahead, man. I'm sorry.
No, sorry, man. No, I'll cut you off then.
Oh, no. I mean, my dad, I mean, I always go back to my dad because he's, you know, he's 81 now. But, you know, his whole life, you know, he's seen this stuff. And he always told me back in the day, he's like, yeah, this is just like E.T., like any of these stuff you see in Close Encounters, you know, all the Spielberg stuff. He's like, there's been a slow trying to get everybody used to the fact that we're not alone, that this is a thing.
He's like, I wish I had someone like that when I was growing up.
So like every time I would see something like that, I was like, yeah, they're just trying to just sprinkle these breadcrumbs. They're just trying to like slowly get into your subconscious of society. Like, this is just normal. Like, don't freak out. This is just a thing, you know? And like, I almost wonder now, like with Dark, like you guys are talking about that. And then like, there's a billion other TV shows now. And it's like, on the Travel Channel, there's a UFO show, or in Paranormal, and like every single thing, there's something out there. And I wonder if somebody's sitting up there with the money or the power. It could be, I don't know, even, you know, maybe at the Invisible College, maybe somebody at that level is just going.
What about the idea, like Jay posted something the other day about Erzan Karamurzavac, I can't remember his name.
Oh my God.
Russian president of a very small country.
Yeah, I'm getting it up on Twitter now. Hang on. Keep talking.
Yeah. But, also president of the Chess Federation of. But saying that he actually had been.
On a UFO. Well,
alien. Not abducted as such, but they arrived in his bedroom in yellow spacesuits. And I can't believe I didn't see this. I didn't go on Twitter for a couple of days. When I came on, I was like, this is a really cool story. But like, yeah, so taking him to space. And this guy is the president of a country. He's also the only Buddhist nation in the Russian Empire.
Yeah, he was, I can't pronounce his name, but it's like Nersen Nikolaevich Ilyumzinov. I've definitely messed up the third name. He's a Russian businessman and politician. He was the president of the Republic of Kalmykia. I've never heard of Kalmykia, in the Russian Federation from 1933 to 2010, and then was president of the FIDE, which is like a chess, like an international chess body. Mm-hmm. So he's like a really, he's quite eccentric, but he's like a very wealthy and successful Russian businessman and former, you know, president. And yeah, he went on record a few times, apparently, including on a TV show where he spoke quite openly about having these experiences. So there's a few people like that.
Yeah, it's just like the one thing that I always hear that, and I'm thinking, okay, like somebody from Japan too was the Japanese prime minister, who's and his wife, I think, was saying that they went on a UFO and they were, you know, she was taken all over the place and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And there's people saying it. They've been saying it for years, man. Like that they've actually had visitations and stuff, and you know, and a lot of the time, and people like, for example, the chess fella, he said, I did this. I went to space. They took me on a trip. I was really worried because I had to be back for a meeting.
like that's what you're going to worry about. Like, man, I got a meeting.
He said that they put him in such ease that he goes like
businessman.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, this could be a potential deal. Yeah, I got to play. Yeah. But like, they flew him around wherever solar system or I don't know space, and then brought him back. And he came back and he said, chess was invented by aliens because it's like the perfect strategic game, the amount of code that's in it, like the potential for messaging and symbology through it, you know, back to masonry with the black and white checkerboard, the number of squares. You look it up, man, it's all there. It gets interesting, and that's coming from a Russian state Buddhist premier.
I love it too, but one of the things, and there's people that are completely divided about Stephen Greer too. People say he's completely lunatic, and other people are like, oh, he's spot on, and that's just another one of those kind of division things. But one of the things that he said that I kind of, and you know, Melinda Leslie has talked about my labs and stuff like that too, and other people have talked about my labs, but you know, like basically getting people from other countries, or, you know, like being able to spoof an alien experience, an abduction experience, you know? And I wonder if maybe this guy, maybe not, maybe for other reasons, not saying it is, but I'm just saying in my mind, I'm always trying to think of the other side of that. Like maybe the guy really did get in there, and maybe he really did get on somebody, you know, some aliens took him or whatever, but maybe it was just somebody in one of these, the top echelon or whatever these control people are, was just like going to pull this on them and make them have this experience, right?
Well, I mean, but that's the other side of it, that most of these experiences that we may have had, or the people out there may have had, by all accounts, they can be created. Like, they can, you know, like the idea of, you know, like, is it Nick Redfern who writes a little bit about the Bentwater stuff? You know, what's it called? Rendlesham.
Yeah, right.
And so he's come out recently and said that his belief now on that is that the whole thing was a psychedelics, holograms, like it was a test. It was like, see how pliable, how much you can make people believe based on the right combination of factors. You know, it's like an illusion.
You've heard of Project Bluebeam, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so absolutely.
I heard from I don't know where, but that the first Iraq war or the second Iraq war, that the U.S. or one of our allies projected giant scorpions in front of, there was like a battalion of Iraqis or somebody, or, you know, insurgents, and they just giant scorpions just boom in front of them. And these guys dropped their shit and ran. I've read another thing. They kind of used it too, where they had, it appeared to somebody who as Allah, and it was like, you're going to drop all your stuff. You're going to tell us where everybody is, and this is going to be it. And these guys just came out and gave up. I don't know if that's true or not.
Well, this is something that Holden mentioned to me in actually quite a recent conversation, because we were talking about the idea of Project Bluebeam, and he'd said that he was briefed in on a program that basically can create any sort of visual manifestation, hologram of anything. You know, he said that the technology is exquisite behind being able to project what looks like a solid state object when it's just light phenomena.
Yeah. And also, like, I mean, the fact that they're doing that, right? And recently it's starting to become commercial too, so you can start buying this stuff, but channel sound. So in terms of a weapon, but actually in terms of only you can hear it without any kind of source.
Yeah, so, I saw that came out. It was a thing. It was like directed to you. Yeah. You don't need to have headphones. You can just direct it to your head. And I'm thinking,
So somebody presents to you a light. It does make me wonder. I mean, like the only experience that I personally have like that is like, you know, without going fully into it, like there has been certain things that I've kind of just gone, Jesus, was that actually projected into my head? Yeah? Mm-hmm. That sounds insane to say.
No,
like during meditation or whatever, or like you're picking up on a frequency that's being broadcast. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yep. I'm almost afraid to say this because it'll make me sound like I'm insane, but I'm pretty sure you can tell I'm not completely insane by now. So I like, you know, like sometimes when I'm drifting off to sleep, and obviously it could quite easily just be you drifting off to sleep. But I'll get a voice in my head, but it will be like, it will sound almost like I've tuned into a radio station for a second, just for a second, and it slips out, and I can never retain it for long, but it will be different, like a female voice or someone completely different to me. But I'll just be lying there and it'll just kind of be like, something will come in and it will go, and I'm like, that didn't sound like it was my brain, like that felt like I just picked it up and it came into my head. So sometimes, you know, maybe it's just transmitter receiver type thing going on, you know.
And then all of a sudden, so maybe we're all just broken receivers, or we've all had the aerial snaps,
it's slightly rusty at least.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, like, you get a jolt,
yeah,
emotional turmoil, and it fixes your radio for a minute.
Yeah.
But you haven't ever experienced any of these incredible channels, and you freak out.
Yeah,
it's kind of scary, man.
Well,
it's
all of us have a lot in common. I mean, like, Jay, I think you used to DJ. I DJ.
I did, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I play guitar. You did too?
Oh, nice. We all DJ. That's so cool. We should do a back to back.
We should, man. We should just mix into each other for a whole set.
What sort of music?
I did like old school hip hop.
Yeah, me too.
Did you?
Nice. That's dope. Yeah. Oh, right. I'm the only like electro house head here, but I'm a hip hop head at heart.
So. There you go. Just bring it in. But like, you know, just thinking of beats and beat matching and just putting it together and stuff like that. I mean, I play guitar. There's drums behind you.
Yeah, I'm a guitarist since 7 years old.
See, I suck at guitar, but I know how to play it. But, you know, like, I mean, we all have, like, all of us have like, look at that. He's got one right behind you. But yeah, like, so all of us have like that. And I've always read that, you know, people that have that kind of talent, or, you know, music, or, you know, one of those different things, a part of our brain is wired differently. And I don't know if that's provable or not, but
I think it, dude, in all honesty, you know, I think that there is something to say about the whole idea of the like intuitive creative side of the human brain. And, you know, if you've got, at least from my perspective, if you've got a good left right brain symbiosis going on, at least from the way I see it, that seems to be a good way to ground yourself, because I would consider myself to be a creative, open-minded person, but I'm also analytical, and I do like data, and I do like to have, you know, concise understandings of things. So I like to see myself in the middle. And I think that that makes, at least to some extent, me a good translator. If I do understand something from a spiritual perspective, I try and I've heard this from my own, you know, people commenting. So I'm only saying this because this is what other people have said to me, but that I'm able to use logic to kind of translate things that would normally be a bit ethereal or, you know, hard to understand. And so I think that there's a really important element of being able to connect to the open, wider sense of consciousness. But if you're going to be someone that wants to explain this stuff, you also need to be able to ground yourself in a sense of logic, because, and I'll be the first to say it, I'm a total hippie, but I get really, really stressed and frustrated with people that are just completely airy fairy, kind of like, yeah, you know, everything's, you know, it's all just vibration and energy. It's like, yeah, that's great, but I want to be able to explain that to other people that don't understand or believe in hippy dippy bullshit, you know?
Right. Right? No, totally.
Because there are different ways to express this. It's all the same thing, but it's just a different way to express it. So I think that, yeah, just to get back to the initial point on this, I do think that creative, intuitive sides of the human mind can lead to you linking with the phenomenon, and because you're just more open to more, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What, I mean, it's funny what you were explaining there. Like, I mean, in terms of the fact that, you know, you say you want to take this message, and you've got a skill to package it and present it to people in a certain way. Yeah. To make something that's not tangible to the people.
Right, right.
Like, and I'm guessing that's the reason that, you know, if that's the message, that's the way you work, it's kind of like TTSA, isn't it, man? Like, you've got your hippie side, which is the books.
Yeah.
And then you've got your delivering the message to the...
The government side, yeah.
You're right, actually.
Why have they chosen you, Jay?
No, actually, I can totally see what you're saying, because I, you know, for me, and it's something that's frustrating, is that I do have a very open mind, and that there are things that, you know, I wouldn't say is fact, but I do believe, and I try and tread a careful line, because I don't want there to be more you know, BS in the community. I don't want to be just throwing out some random idea, but I do have some very incredible experiences that could have only been brought on by what I've been talking about. And so, you know, yeah, I want to try and find the best way to have that conversation without making people feel like I'm just some crazy Fruit Loop, you know, because I resent that. I'm not a crazy Fruit Loop.
No, nobody thinks you are, man. I think
I appreciate that, but yeah.
Is anybody thinking that, mate? Like,
no, I just mean like outside of the community, you know. I mean for all of us in general, outside of the confines of this fringe community, I want us all to be taken seriously. I don't want people to just make that assumption. So I guess for me, it's important that I have my own beliefs and I have my own way of seeing this, but I also try and make sure I present information as sensibly as possible and don't let any bias come in, like, as much as I can, you know, because we all have bias, but I try and keep it as objective as possible.
Yeah.
As an interviewer, I suppose you've got to.
That's what I mean, as an interviewer. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, but it's fair. I mean, that's why it's nice to have you on talking now, because...
Yeah, dude.
You're showing yourself as you as opposed to Project Uni. You're Jay as opposed to Project Uni, if you know what I mean, yeah?
Yeah, man. I'm more than just a platform.
No. And I think it's cool that however Holden, did you ever ask that Holden how he found you or why? Or did you ever ask him, dude, why are you doing this with me?
So, yeah, he said that he was looking through lots of different channels on YouTube and on the internet, just trying to find people that were doing something that he was impressed with, and quite simply landed on my channel and listened to some videos. And from there, I mean, he's been honest with me and said that this is like the British modesty come in, and I don't want to like toot my own horn, but like he said that he saw leadership qualities in me, and that I was someone that he didn't feel like I had an agenda. He didn't feel like I was trying to push my own personal belief. One of the first things he really wanted to know was my religious background and kind of how my views on the world, because he wanted to see if I had any, you know, internal biases towards stuff. And wanted to make sure he was interacting with someone who, I mean, there's a few reasons. I mean, one thing was that I'm a younger guy with a clean slate, essentially. He said I've come into this, I'm willing to learn, I'm not saying this is the way it is, I'm genuinely trying to understand it. And so he wanted to work with someone that didn't have to put in groundwork of breaking down some sort of already created agenda about what the phenomenon is. So I guess, yeah, he seems to have seen in me someone that is doing something for the right reasons, and for whatever reason, he feels like I'm worth interacting with.
No, that's cool, man. I mean, that's exactly what I told you earlier, how I thought that you were just a straight up dude.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, dude.
Can I ask you a question?
Same to you.
Right?
Yeah, man.
So that's a cool contact. And then especially like being borne out by the fact that Scott Walter's now been contacted too by the same guy, and it's all coming out. Do you think, right, because I remember, you know, out of Chris Mellon's 22 followers, you're one of them, yeah, that he follows, or sorry, followees, he follows you, right? So out of all of the array of podcasts and people interviewing about this topic, why are you? And also, do you think he knows Holden, or do you think he knows, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, the truth is that I am actually an intergalactic spy, and I don't know. I think that he's made me aware that he's connected to those people in some way and has communicated with TTSA staff members. So I think that there's probably a likelihood that he knows or could at least communicate with people like Chris. I was as surprised as you and anyone else that knows about it to see Christopher Mellon follow me on Twitter, because like you said, he doesn't follow like anyone else. He follows Tim McMillan and that's kind of it. And I was just like
Lou.
Lou and Tim McMillan and then like the Veterans Society for the United States and things like that. And so it was weird to see me on there. And I've tried to reach out to Chris and I've tried to get you know, I've DM'd him, but he hasn't seen it. And so I'm not gonna keep spamming him or anything like that. But I'd love to get him on for a conversation at some point. And I'm as intrigued as everyone else who's wondering, you know, why is he following me? Because I'd love to know what the specific reason is, if there was anything. Maybe it was when I got the interview with Ralph and Leslie, obviously, like that kind of came out of nowhere and came out of nowhere for me as well, for this kind of, you know, really little channel to get the first interview for this new story in the New York Times. That I'm guessing that must have caught his attention because he was interacting with Leslie Kane and Ralph Blumenthal and, you know, getting that story out. So I'm going to assume the interest came from that, but I don't know what's going on there.
Well, I was really shocked when Lou Elizondo answered like six of my questions, like earlier in the year. I was like, I'm just asking. And he was just coming back and answering me, man. And I was like, wow, that was pretty cool. And one of the things that just keeps sticking out to me that he said was, you know, my one question to him was like, if Disclosure happens tomorrow, what's TTSA's mission? How does it change? And he said, you know, we always got to, I'm paraphrasing, I'll pull it up. But basically he said that, you know, we got to change, you know, as everything else changes. And Mother Nature has a lot of clues for us.
Yeah, yeah. That's interesting, isn't it?
And I was like, and she holds a lot of clues for us. And, you know, we need to listen to her. And I'm thinking,
that statement, right, that's kind of cool. It's interesting because I read something last night about Project Bluebeam. Sorry, Lou Elizondo. It basically was like, what they'll do is there'll be a series of earthquakes, or there'll be an earthquake or some kind of natural event where it will uncover, Mother Nature will uncover many secrets. And I read that last night in the Occult History of the Flying Saucer by John somebody, I can't remember, but I'll find out.
Standard light reading.
Yeah.
for people like us. Yeah.
A few chapters of that before bed.
Yeah, always, you know, tuck yourself in.
Yeah. Yeah. Doesn't influence your dreams at all.
That's right. You were on the phone to like a black ops secret general.
Yeah, Jay was talking to a black ops secret general. My wife was hitting me because I was snoring.
standard.
Yeah, just a normal night.
I hate to do this, but I'm going to have to run off in like 4 minutes because I've been promising my Patreons I'd jump into like a little voice chat. So I'm going to be doing that.
I need to eat something.
Yeah, no, this has been awesome, man. Thank you guys so much.
Anytime. Like, honestly, I'd love for us to reconvene and maybe even have both of you on the channel as well on Project Unity, because this has been awesome.
Always, man. for sure.
Just have a normal chat conversation, and like, you know, that's how it should be, man. It's all good.
Yeah, exactly. This has felt like a relaxed kind of, as relaxed as it can be with this subject matter, but a good conversation, man. Like, I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too. I mean, after I talked with Jean-Luc before, I mean, I told my wife, I'm like, there's like a handful of people I think on the planet that can have just this open, free-flowing conversation where nobody judges you, where you can, and you just, you, everybody gets something out of it. And I think that's been awesome with you guys, man. Totally. I really appreciate
Absolutely.
You guys.
And good for you as well, man, in getting a YouTube channel up, because you're doing great as well. Like, what you're doing is awesome. I've been tuning
Thank
in.
You. Thank
so,
you.
So, yeah, appreciate just keep that. Up the good work, bro.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it was, I didn't, there was a guy from in Engaging the Phenomenon.
Oh yeah, James Iandoli.
Yeah, James James hit me up. He was like, dude, you should do a channel. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? He's like, no, dude. He's like, dude. I'm like, no. He's like, no, you should. And I was like, why? All right. All right. He's like, well, what else are you going to do? And I'm like, all right, cool. You know? And he's like, just do this thing for me. Just do this. And I'm like, all right. So he kind of really spurred it on, man. And
nice.
He's a cool dude. So
he is. I'm going to have him on soon as well. Maybe we can all get on together, actually.
Yeah. That'd be
cool.
Rad.
Yeah,
that'd be all rad. Hey, and the invitation's always open for America. Anytime you guys want to come?
Yeah. Awesome, man. Awesome.
Come on, all right, man. I'll put you up. We got enough room. We'll all hang out. It'll be fun.
I'm there.
Seriously, anytime. Just don't bring that weird string of coronavirus with you.
Yeah, we'll try not to.
You guys stay safe, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Take it easy, brother. See you later.
See you guys.
Take care, guys.
Bye.